Hey, Hicken here. Thanks for checking out the 1010XL On Demand. It's brought to you by Kuhn Flowers, locations on Beach Boulevard and in Ponte Vedra. Kuhn Flowers wants to be your florist.
Hey, thanks for stopping by. Glad you're along for the ride on a Monday with Hayes Carlion, Lauren Brooks, and Andrew Gibson. I'm Frank Frangie. A lot to talk about today. You know what there is today? There's a bet loser, but more importantly, there's a loser. I'm hungry. Do I look hungry? Look at me. Do I look hungry?
You do.
Every now and then when you get hungry, I'm going to tell you right now.
Going with grilled over fried.
No wonder. I haven't eaten since Friday. Okay. I've had nothing but water. Okay. It's hard. Well, nothing but water. You have to have a lot of water.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's what I've had. Saltines and water just to stay alive.
A Spartan diet.
Especially after Tiger started making triples and doubles or whatever he was making.
Ooh, it was bad.
So do we have food?
We do. Are you ready?
Gibby, when should we do the food? I think we go right at it. For you don't know how, Loser Monday, the loser has to buy the grub. Hayes was the loser.
By a mile.
I'm ready, but you want the song first?
We'll do the song when we come back next break, right?
We do?
Okay, we'll do that. So you want to wait till next break? We'll wait till we come back next break.
Ooh, a stay of execution.
Well, there is, but
the governor might call.
I will also say this. There was also, I put a side bet. Let me be clear before I get to the side bet. The standings only count the real losers, just so we're clear about that, okay?
I think you made that perfectly clear on Twitter.
Yeah, I wanted to be very sure about that. And by the way, this now five events in a row that I haven't lost. So I get two words for you, Carline. Jolton Joe. Okay.
Just you're coming.
I'm 51 back of Jolton Joe.
Yeah.
Just so we know that.
Yeah, okay.
But your pick was right all along, Brooks. You had to feel good about that. You kind of whooped our butts on that pick.
Do I look like I'm gloating?
You actually don't. Why aren't you gloating?
Because multiple people came up to me this weekend. Yes. And said, Brooks Koepka for the win.
Yeah,
and I said, yes. People I did not know.
Yeah, yeah.
That's how.
She's a major star.
Yeah, she's such
a
celebrity.
I'm a star.
She's such a celebrity.
Monday has really taken hold of people.
Well,
but I am not only hungry, I am thirsty.
Yeah, okay. Well, I'm
hungry and thirsty. How about you, Gibby? Are you hungry and thirsty?
Very thirsty, actually.
Well said. Well, let me tell you how good I am at making side bets, okay? I don't mind telling you guys I'm skilled. And I think because I'm skilled, you guys can learn from me. You can learn from my toughness, my savvy. Not only my savvy, but my moxie, okay? I'm so good at making side bets that even if Koepka had choked it away, I still would have lost the damn bet. Just so you know, the other guy. I mean, you guys could have taken two against the field. So how about that?
Even Rory ended up like top 10,
yeah,
considering
he did.
That he almost missed the cut.
So I lost a side bet. It was four against the field. Gibby, Hayes, and Lauren all had the four guys, which were Koepka, DJ, Rory, and Tiger. I thought you guys made a terribly dumb bet. Always take the field. And again, my bet was so dumb, I would have lost even if Koepka had choked. I just wanted somebody else in it so I could enjoy it on Sunday, right? I didn't even know who I was rooting for.
And your bet was so funny to us because you took one of the four in our in our picks. But then you took the field outside of it.
Yeah, but I just wanted one of my four not to be last. So that
it was, is a different.
That was your strategy.
Yeah, that was it. So anyway, so because I'm a man of my word, I got to thinking. So I said to myself.
Self?
Please don't steal my thunder, okay? Please stay out of this.
Sorry, I didn't think you were going there.
Sit back, please. Okay, thank you. I'll start over. I said to myself. Self? Since I lost this bet so significantly, I bet Hayes Carlion. Six-pack of Bud Light. Well, you and I had a bet. And then I thought to myself, but would Hayes really want Bud Light? I mean, if he could pick what he wants.
Oh. Well,
this is starting to get good.
I think Hayes would pick Jack. I think if Hayes had his choice.
Yes.
Home run.
And because I lost a bet so severely.
Wow.
What would Hayes drink here, Gibby? Would Hayes drink Bud Light or would he want this guy? Hayes Carlin, who's one of my friends, and I care about him, okay? So I think I got a friend named Jack.
Nice. Okay? Gibby, when you're done taking that picture, I get his five shot glasses.
Right, so there you go. So there's one bet.
Thank you, sir. That's so nice of you.
Then I got to thinking.
I need to.
So then after that, I said to myself, self, Brooks really kicked our butts in this. And Brooks probably likes Icy Light, but would you really like Icy Light? Or would she like a bottle of red wine? That's what I said to myself.
Wow.
What do you think Brooks would really like, okay? So I think Brooks would prefer this Okay, and it's
fabulous.
Yeah, and it's not like super expensive, but it was the most expensive one I could find. So there you go.
That is so nice of you. Okay. Thank you.
That's a great brand.
It's sustainably farmed.
And then I thought, I don't really know what Gibby drinks, but everybody else got an upgrade.
I think he likes Yoo-hoo.
So, good point. So Gibby got a bigger, Gibby got eight instead of six, okay?
Nice.
So there you go, Gibby. So that's my side bet.
Those are the big cans.
Yeah, you got a bunch of those.
16-ounce cans.
16-ounce cans, so...
You outdid yourself.
Well, look, when you're that dumb a bet, so you got to pay up. I said, Hayes would rather have Jack. You would rather, I have no idea what kind of wine you like, but hope that, because they said it's good.
It's wonderful. It says small batch, so it's just like in craft beer, you know, small batches. So
Nothing. There's nothing I know better than wine except craft beer.
Exactly.
So there's that. So there you go.
Thank you.
Well, thank you. This is very generous.
Well, you're not welcome. I'm not happy about this bet. I thought maybe Tommy Fleetwood the first day could bail me out.
If it makes you feel any better, I might watch a few big-time Gator victories with this bottle.
Well, you know what? Then it does make me feel better. So there you go.
This might only last tonight and tomorrow.
Right. They better play quick, though.
If it gets me to football season, there's something wrong.
All right. So there's a lot that – oh, you mean your bottle, right?
My bottle, not his bottle.
A lot we want to talk about today on the program, not the least of OTAs tomorrow. We're going to get to that. Hayes has a terrific column on what to watch for. But what about freaking Koepka? I mean, good gracious. I asked Joe this, who knows golf way better than I do. But realistically, let's be honest here. You can't compare anything to the Tiger run. Other than the Tiger run, isn't this better than all of them? Isn't this better than Spieth or DJ or Bubba? Isn't it?
It's the best we've ever seen in terms of going from major one to major four.
Yeah.
He did it in 700 days. The record previous was 1,100 days, so he crushed it. We've never seen anybody, and this includes Tiger Woods, that has won his first major and then so quickly gotten to four. And it does make you wonder, where will this end?
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty amazing stuff. So we're going to talk about Brooks Koepka today on the program. We are going to certainly talk about Jags OTAs and what to watch for. It's going to be fun. The media gets to take a peek at them on the field. Can't wait for that. We're going to talk a little bit about hardball. Interesting things going on with regard to openers, teams winning, teams losing. College mags are out, by the way. Athlons, Lindy, Street and Smith. So it's officially football season. I got a thought or two about that coming up as well. So we're glad you're with us. A lot to do when we come back. The Walk of Shame hails from the bowl school. We're going to all eat heartily. That's next on 1010 XL and 92.5 FM.
Have you heard about the lonesome loser? He's a loser, but he still keeps on trying.
Here's what I'll tell you. The lonesome loser really wasn't all that lonesome over the weekend. He was at the driving range. He was at all kind of fun stuff. Right?
Yeah. Had a fun
weekend.
The breakfast spot looked fantastic.
Really? You couldn't identify the breakfast spot?
I also didn't look that closely. Was it IHOP?
No. Oh. That's interesting.
I actually didn't look closely. I just saw the food. Yeah. But I love the fact that that Carrie would probably just punch you right in the face if she saw the non-nutritious breakfast. God bless you. What a good parent.
Well, they'd never been there.
That is parenting. Where'd you go? Where was it?
It was the Waffle House.
Okay.
That's my second guess.
Yeah, and
they'd never been to Waffle House?
They'd never been. Well, I knew I'd never taken them, and I had mentioned
that's
it a couple
awesome.
Of times, and for whatever reason, it just never worked out. So I knew Carrie hadn't taken
them. Right.
And I was like, you know, you guys are 10 years old and 8 years old, and you're Americans. It's time for us to go to the Waffle House.
The first time you go can't be drunk at 4 a.m. when you're in college.
Right. Well, that was what I was sort of imagining. Yeah. It's like them at like 18 years old saying to their friends, I've never been to the Waffle House. And having their friends look at them and say, what are you, crazy? Who raised you?
So I was like, we're
rectifying this today. And they loved it. It was funny, too, because Jackson.
I'm going to look a little closer now, and I bet I can identify it.
Well, and I can tell you this, too.
Walked in, and there was like a baseball team right at the counter. I was like, if this isn't America.
I will tell you, a word on the street is, and you can confirm or deny this because I wasn't at your home when it happened, but the word is that both Avery and Jackson have gone to their mom and asked if there's another Founders weekend next weekend, is there something, can we, or alumni weekend, can we schedule another alumni's weekend?
We had a good time, but it's good. Glad Carrie's done with it, and you guys hungry?
Now
you've
we're
waited
hungry,
long
let's
enough.
Get this thing right, going, okay? The loser, Tiger Woods.
Thank you, Tiger.
Tiger lost so badly, he ought to buy dinner, breakfast, and all of it. He's not very happy.
I'm just glad the kids now understand smothered and covered.
Of course, you got to understand that, don't you?
I love Waffle House.
So, but there's the so there the two bets are paid off. We're about to eat some. I can't wait to eat. I think he went by Chick-fil-A, didn't he?
He did. Chick-fil-A is providing you and Gibby with some grilled nuggets.
There we go. Here it comes. Here it comes. I'm grilled because got to stand here. Yay. There's the loser. Love. Oh, look at the loser. He's serving us too, huh? The loser's got to do a little servings. What happened here?
Love it.
The serving time for the.
Don't make a weird face. Yeah. Yes, I got the chicken noodle soup. It's delicious.
Oh, that soup. That is. First of all, I'm embarrassed for you.
You got grilled nuggets.
I did get grilled.
Normally, I don't want to hear any.
Normally,
trash
I get you. But everything at Chick-fil-A is good. So
absolutely.
You know, you could tell the guy's been a server. He's trying to please right now. Okay. Yeah. He also thinks he. You know, Brooks. Have you told him yet that he's probably not getting the tip he's hoping for? You go. You work at the Moss Pit Grill all those years. You're looking for gratuity.
That
is what he
true.
Wants. Is that mine? There we go.
Oh, there we go. Grilled nuggets. So the grilled nuggets come with French fries. There we go.
How about that? So grilled nuggets for us everybody. Do you have your soup? What about her soup? Did you get
it's
your
right
soup?
Here?
Oh, then there we go. Well done, Hayes. That's our food. That is Loser Monday. It's the way it works around here. When there's a big sporting event, we all pick a winner, and we don't really care who wins. We just don't want to be the one that loses because Loser Monday, the loser has to buy the food, and Hayes is lost. So
I kind of care who wins, by the way.
Yeah, and I was
when it's me.
And the truth of the matter was, I was going to all along kind of publish the standings, but I had I waited till they were favorable. I said, I've been waiting 7 weeks to publish the damn standings. Now I've published the standings. I've lost once. These three losers have all lost twice.
I think you should have added that my horse won but was disqualified.
Well, what I was going to say is, because I care about you guys. I wouldn't have got you the good alcohol if I didn't care about you. Do you want me to start doing it blindfolded? I mean, or should I tie a hand behind my back when I pick? I mean,
I know.
I'll do if I need to. I mean, for you, Brooks, I would do that. I will. You want me to fake it and try and get it wrong so I won't win it? Since you guys won't always have to be the losers.
You're being haughty when you just made one of the worst bets ever last week. Is that what's happening here?
I had to buy whiskey, wine, barley, and hops. And after all that, I'm still cocky.
And you're still
a cocky guy.
I was the first loser, right? I was the first?
You were the first. I was the second.
And now Hayes is the most recent.
Well, I was the first loser, and the reason was Brooks Koepka. That was the best thing that's ever happened to Brooks Koepka. Yeah.
Well, that's right. Good point. You got him going. As a matter of fact, the best part is it's been a slow process. But I'm teaching Brooks to taunt, and she's still not very good at it. But you're getting better, Brooks.
You're
picking up the pace.
By the way, were y'all cheering against Brooks Koepka yesterday when he had the four straight bogeys?
I wasn't. I was. I didn't. You know, I probably would have rooted more for DJ before just because I kind of was a fan of his. But I didn't want to see the guy blow. He played so great for 4 days. I didn't want to see him blow it. Did you?
No.
Yeah, I didn't want to see. That would have been sad. You know what I mean? You don't want the memory of the tournament, the remembrance of the tournament, to be the guy who lost it. You want it to be the guy who won it.
Right, because we all remember the Jordan Spieth collapse.
Jean Vandeveld is a great
poster
one. But Mickelson when Ogilvy won. We remember DJ missing the putt in Chambers Bay.
Right.
We remember those too much. This now, because he held on, you remember how great he played for all four rounds, not the guy. DJ wouldn't have even gotten credit for this. People would have talked about how Koepka blew it, right? He started
Absolutely.
Sunday with a 7-shot lead. And you had a hunch, though, that he wasn't winning by 7. I had a hunch. I didn't know who it was. I thought somebody, and I didn't think it would get down to 1 shot. I probably wouldn't have said it would go from 7 to 1, but you had a hunch someone was making a run. Even Koepka, who was so calm, and the reason he wins majors is because he has that slow heartbeat and doesn't get rattled, and even him, this is Sunday at a major, and I almost think it's harder sometimes when you have the big lead. You know that? It's not, how many times you watch a basketball game, you almost wish when your team gets out to that 12-point lead or 14-point lead, it was with 3 minutes to play, not 3 minutes in, right? Because then you're worried about blowing it the whole time. But I'll tell you this. We talked Friday about how fitness and how he's in shape and the toughness with this guy. This is an amazing run. And now the question becomes, how many of them is he going to win? Can he win a fifth major before he's 30, right? The only person that ever did that is Tiger. Tiger, there's three other people that have won four before 30. The only player that ever won more than four, he won 10, by the way, more than four by 30 is Tiger Woods. So he'll be the second guy to ever do it. He's got two more majors before he turns 30. Can he become that? And can he start showing up in the other events? Now, that's part of it, too. But I think he's an amazing player. And again, we talked about this Friday. He punched the field in the mouth in the first round, knocked him down for a standing eight count, and never let up until the end. And in the end, he had enough of a lead build up. It was a great win. And this run by Brooks Koepka is pretty freaking amazing. It really is.
The thing, too, is it's like it's bizarre in the sense that what he's done is remarkable, but I still just can't – for some reason, I can't anoint him in my mind as quickly as I could like Rory and even Spieth, where it was like they won early and it was like, oh, wow, these guys are going to be unbelievable for a really long time, and it really hasn't held up. Rory's in a major drought now, although he did just win the Players, which is obviously a huge event. Jordan is really just starting to maybe find his form. I still don't know. Like, if you were to tell me that Koepka finishes his career at four, I think I could – I don't think I would be greatly shocked by that.
Really?
Yeah. I just – for whatever reason, and it feels more to me like a guy on a unbelievable two-year run than it is a generationally great golfer, but – maybe I don't know why. I don't know whether it's he was sort of on the scene for a while before he finally won the first U.S. Open. So I don't know if it's that. You know, Jordan and Rory sort of came out of nowhere quicker with less time on tour. How do you guys feel? Where do you guys, if you had to guess today, how many majors do you think he wins?
I think that's a good question. I understand the not ready to anoint him part because I think both times we've done it recently, the media has done it, those guys are no longer winning at the pace that they were. And obviously Spieth had really fallen apart until recently. So I get that part of it. But I think when you watch him play golf as calm as he did, maybe not, you know, the back nine yesterday, but for the majority of the Thursday, Friday, and Saturday rounds, he plays so calm. He has such composure. And remember, he was playing with Tiger. Obviously, you know that, Hayes. He was playing with Tiger Thursday and Friday, and yet he remains just incredibly calm. So I think he could win at least another 3 to 5 majors.
Yeah, I think with the parity there is in the field today, that it's going to be hard for anybody to get to double-digit majors again. I think there's so many good players now. I really believe that. They're better than ever. They're more fit than ever. There's more players playing junior golf than ever. There's more great college golfers than ever. So to your point, Hayes, I would not be surprised if he doesn't get 10, 12, 14. But to what you just said, Lauren, here's the best validation, even in our little radio show here, all right? There was no doubt in your mind, Lauren, if you picked first, you were taking Brooks Koepka. There was no doubt in your mind.
Right.
I wouldn't have picked him because I'm a freaking idiot. But you guys, even Gibby, you and Hayes both, there was no doubt in your mind he was in the top two or three or whatever. No doubt. You guys had no doubt. And even given that, that meant we're a microcosm of what people are thinking. That meant everybody knew he was under great pressure to win, and he still blew away the field. It's way harder when you can't sneak up on anybody. It's way harder than the whole world expects you to be great. And you know what he did? He went out and was great when there was all the pressure to be great. There's no pressure on Tommy Fleetwood to be great. That may come one day. There's no pressure on John Rahm to be great. It's getting closer, but there's not pressure on those guys to be great yet. It was not easy. When Patrick Reed won the Masters a year ago, there was no pressure on Patrick Reed. His family didn't like him. People thought he was a bad guy. And he just said, "I'll screw it. I'll just go win." There was pressure on Koepka to be great, just like there is on DJ, just like there is on, obviously, anytime Tiger tees it. God bless Tiger. He'll never the rest of his life ever tee it up without that same pressure, ever, ever. Well, Koepka felt it 2-1 anyway. So that's what makes me think, you know what? Hell, maybe he can. Because the pressure doesn't bother him. I think we found that. And by the way, I don't think pressure got to him yesterday with the bogeys. I just think it was, like I said, at the top, it's still Sunday to major, so you're gonna hold the club a little tighter. I just think he was due to play a few bad holes, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
it's like if you hit 15 threes in a row,
that you're due to
miss
one. Eventually,
you're gonna miss.
You didn't choke. You're just due to miss a few. Right. That's what
you're
that
just
was.
Human.
Yeah. And that's right. So, what a win by Brooks Koepka. What a fun event! I wish there had been two of them, two guys back and forth the whole time, which would have made all 4 days more fun. Yesterday got fun,
right?
But it wasn't for the whole time. So goodness gracious, what a player he has become.
Yeah, and just to say something quick on DJ that I find remarkable is he broke 70 in every single round.
Right.
And he did that at the Players too. It's amazing, as consistent as he is, that it hasn't led to very many majors. He's sitting on, I think, just one, just the one. And, you know, so we'll see if obviously he'll be a major contender at Pebble. But that's a guy that you start to wonder if he's feeling a lot of. He's playing great golf, but he's not seeing the sort of results that you would think you would. I mean, if you had told somebody on Thursday morning that Dustin Johnson's going to break 70 every single round, they just said, oh, he's absolutely going to win the event. I mean, Koepka didn't do it. Koepka only broke 70 twice.
Right.
But when he broke it, he broke it huge.
Right. How great is it that in this amazing year of golf, where Rory won the Players, Eldrick won the Masters, Brooks Koepka, gigantic name player, wins the PGA, and the U.S. Open is at Pebble, one of the most storied golf courses in the world. How cool is that? That the U.S. Open is at Pebble.
And Pebble usually produces iconic champions.
Yes,
it does. Last time it was Graham McDowell, who was a good player. But, I mean, you've seen Nicklaus win the Open there. Tiger's won the Open there. Tom Watson's won the Open there. So, normally at Pebble Beach, you're going to see the elite players, one of the elite players, win it all.
Right. So, it's been a fun. What a wonderful tournament.
I mean, like you said, people wanted more drama, perhaps, Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Did you want drama?
No. Yesterday, when he bogeyed his fourth straight hole, that's when I got really nervous.
Even though you were winning both bets either way?
You had him in the
other one. Yeah, but I had him in my fantasy golf league.
So did you, like, make up a ton of ground?
Well, a lot of people in front of me also had him. I was in 12th going into the weekend, and a lot of people in front of me had him. Not everyone, though. So I will shoot past people they haven't updated. I checked earlier.
What's the Lenardi's projection of where you'll be?
It's a good question. I have not checked with him yet. I think he's on vacation until basketball season starts. I just find it fascinating that Koepka made history in multiple ways, right? The fact that he had the lowest 36-hole score in a major championship ever, right? So beating Tiger on that. And Tiger never held back-to-back titles at the same major. So Koepka is creating a lot of pressure on himself, but he's also telling the world, and especially a guy like Brandon Chamblee, who's said some not so great things about him, that he's here to stay.
And even though Brandon Chamblee's a smart guy, aren't we beyond him now? Because he took the Tiger shots, now he takes the Koepka shots. Aren't we like, I'm almost to eye raising level with Brandon Chamblee now?
Yeah, I didn't watch him as much this week as normally I will at the Players or at a major. But I will say that, and I don't know exactly what he said on Koepka, but I'll just say in general, I like guys that will speak their mind. And when you speak your mind, you're going to miss. I mean, that's just part of life. If you're going to have strong opinions on things, then and be willing to make, you know, strong predictions on things, you're going to have some where you just totally whiff.
Yeah, I agree.
And
with
so
that.
I hope it doesn't, like, water him down.
Well, there's a fine line for me, and I probably don't know golf well enough to be able to discern that fine line completely with Brandon Chamblee. But there's a fine line, Hayes, between the guy who says his honest opinion and doesn't care whether it flusters people, a la Johnny Miller, or a guy who's trying to grandstand and trying to say things that will ruffle people because nobody else is saying those things. I don't know him well enough, or probably the inner workings of golf well enough to know if he's that guy, but it ran through my mind this time.
And his do seem a little bit more personal, which is a big difference.
He questioned Koepka's toughness during the Masters.
Yeah,
a lot.
Yeah. So he did well again. I think
and said that he lost weight for a photo shoot versus getting in shape.
Yeah, and again, he's been proven wrong again. So I mean, this, the proof is in the play. And I'm no Koepka fan. One other thing about Koepka, he's a Florida State guy. You know, I don't know that we, not just our radio station, that's trumpeted enough. I'll be honest. If this was a Gator guy doing this, we'd be over the moon. You know, so it's pretty cool that
we've talked about Billy Horschel a lot over the past few years.
It's pretty cool that a Florida State guy, this is the guy who played college golf 2 hours from here, is maybe the best player in the world right now. That's pretty good stuff. So that is that's cool. Seminole fans, take a bow because this is your guy, and it's a cool deal. It really is.
By the way, Hayes, do you wish you had taken Paul Casey?
That's a that great a, point.
Maybe the best point of the
But you would have still lost.
Breaking
right?
out the daggers at 3:30 on a Monday afternoon.
You know what? I've never been.
I like it. You know, a nice shiny dagger.
So let me just say this. Some of the taunts in the last, even those directed at me, I've never been prouder of her.
Yeah. Okay, I like it.
I think she's getting there. I like her. It's been a tough study.
It's just golf.
Yeah, yeah. And
again, just move on.
Yeah, and two things. A, I would never taunt. B, Gibby, now that I've only had one loss, is it too early to calculate a magic number? I just got to, just so we know. Too early. Just checking with you.
Maybe too early.
When we come back, let's talk Jags OTA. Hayes has a terrific column, as he always does on 1010XL, about what to watch for. I can't wait to see the team together. Jags OTA start tomorrow. We'll talk about it after this.
He works his teammates really, really well. He does, you use the word selfless. That's the approach he uses. I think the second day he was here, he's over at Fournette's early in the morning, and they're going over the installation for that day, mm-hmm. you know, kind of thing. And, he's out there working just like everybody else is working, and his presence is what's important. It's kind of like that thing that I insinuate a lot. I don't know if anybody's listening, but, you know, don't tell me, show me.
I love the part where Tom Coughlin says, I don't know if anybody's listening. Oh, trust me. People are listening. That, is, of course, is the Executive Vice President of Football Operations of the Jacksonville Jaguars. He joined the drill this morning. They had their Celebrity Golf Classic out at TPC Sawgrass. And certainly last night's gala was wonderful from what I could see and hear. When it comes to tomorrow's first OTA that we get to see, which is very exciting, Hayes, you've got a few things you're looking to watch, and number one would be Nick Foles.
Yeah, absolutely. And, isn't that, Franken, that number one thing that you'll be looking at,
without
Nick Foles?
Question,
I mean,
question.
To me, it's...
It may be one through seven.
Yeah.
There's 10.
There's a lot of intriguing things, but to me, it all starts with Nick Foles, because that is the key to the turnaround. If they are going to get back to the 2017 form, when they went 10-6 and got to the AFC Championship game, it's going to start with Nick Foles. He's got to be a significant upgrade. And I think that we'll see that. I think if he is truly a significant upgrade over Blake Bortles, I don't think that's something that hides and then pops up, you know, in the first three games of the season. I think that's something that's evident pretty early on. And so I think you're looking for... Is the passing game in a rhythm? You shouldn't see a lot of balls on the ground this time of year. So, to me, it starts and not ends, because there's certainly a lot of other intriguing storylines. But it all comes back to if Nick Foles is the player they believe they signed, they will be in the playoffs. And if he is not, then they are staring at a total rebuild.
I don't find myself thinking, at least for me, that you can go to an OTA and learn a lot about the big guys. Big guys are about physicality. I don't think you can't learn, obviously, run blocking. I'm not smart enough to learn if the running back is hitting the right holes and if the linebackers have a proper fit. I can't tell that. I can tell when the running game's working, when everybody's in pads and hitting, but I don't know linebacker fit and running backs hitting the right hole. I don't know that. So I can't watch that and tell you that. What I can tell you is if the ball's coming out of Nick Foles' hand, okay. If it looks like he's throwing on time, if it looks like his receivers have their back turned when the ball leaves his hand and turns on time and the ball's right on him, if he's throwing guys open, which means he's throwing before the cuts and before the second gear, that I can tell. So that's what I'm going to watch. I'm going to watch the receivers. I'm going to watch Foles a great deal. I'm going to watch battles down the field between receivers and and defensive backs. I will tell you this. I will like to look at the running back group. Does Fournette look like he's in good shape? Now, look, Lauren, you've made the best point. You made the first person to make this point last year, and you were right. It looked like he was in great shape last year, and he got hurt. So that's obviously not a barometer whether or not he's going to get hurt. But I'm going to look and see if I think he looks in good shape. I want to see what Alfred Blue looks like. I want to see what the young running backs look like. I want to get a pretty good idea of what we're watching. I certainly want to watch Josh Oliver to see, does he look thick? Does he look too lean? Does he catch the ball well? We're told he does, but I've never seen it. I want to watch it. So I think Josh Oliver's high on the list for me. Obviously, Foles is on the list for me. How the running backs look. Again, for me, defensive guys, it's hard to tell because the defense is about violence and physicality, and there's you can't have that in OTAs. But I certainly will watch the pitching and the catching. I certainly will watch the receivers. Marquise Lee, as Hayes says in his, and again, go to 1010XL.com if you really want to read what's going on with the Jags, because Hayes has it and does as good a job, maybe the best job of anybody. And you point out that Marquise won't be out there. But I think the greatness of this passing game, greatness, that's the wrong word, the potential for this passing game for me rests more with Dede Westbrook and DJ Chark than it does with Marquise Lee. I know Lee's the veteran, but it's not like he's a seven-year vet. He's not Larry Fitzgerald, who's played double-digit years in the league, and you know he's always open on third and eight with an 11-yard dig. That's not what Marquise did that 1 year in the very good year. He had a very severe injury where he damaged three different ligaments in that knee. He's a good guy, and he's trying to come back. And I expect him to be part of the passing game. I don't expect him to be the star of the passing game, the pass-catching game. Do you?
No.
I don't. Do you think that?
No.
It's one of those other two guys.
No, we thought that they got it wrong when CBS ranked the triplets, and they used Marquise Lee as their receiver.
If Antonio Brown was coming off this, I don't think people would expect.
Correct.
1,400 Correct. Yards and nine touchdowns.
That's right. They wouldn't expect him to be his best. Whatever Marquise's best is, it's hard to predict your best when you're coming off this injury. That's right, and I feel that way too. So Westbrook and Chark are so important in my mind. Keelan Cole is important. What's Chris Conley got left? How does he look? Well, those guys I will really watch. Josh Oliver I will watch. Look, I want to watch Swaim and Koyak and O'Shaughnessy, but I've got a little idea what Koyak and O'Shaughnessy have. Swaim, we'll see. I'm more excited about Josh Oliver because I think he's got the bigger and the better upside. So for me, yeah, I this is a pitching and catching for me, Brooks.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've seen a lackluster quarterback in OTAs, regardless of his performance during the season at times. Blake Bortles in OTAs and in training camp never looked like an elite quarterback. I cannot wait to see what an elite quarterback looks like. And maybe Nick Foles shouldn't yet be put into that category, but certainly a guy who is supposed to know exactly where to go with the football. And, you know, we've rationalized in the past, well, this defense is really good, so that's why the offense doesn't look all that good. Well, those rationalizations are gone. The defense may still be really good, but this offense, like you said, Hayes, the rhythm, this offense needs to look like an NFL offense starting tomorrow.
I think it'll also be interesting just to see what they do, you know, schematically. With DeFilippo, we'll start to get a sense of that. And defensively, you know, who gets the first rep in absence of Telvin Smith? I mean,
yeah, you're right.
That doesn't mean that player is going to be the starter when the Chiefs come to town, but that will give you an idea of at least what they're sort of thinking right now.
By the way, I'm glad you said that and thought about that. Assuming Jake Ryan is a Mike, not a Will, which is what Tony Boselli told the boys in the morning, and he would know. And assuming that Miles Jack stays at least for now at the mic, which is what he told everybody at Calais' bowling event, who does run out first at the Will?
It's a great question because these guys usually don't like to throw rookies out there
right.
in this position. This is the administration that you know didn't have Fournette or Cam Robinson running with the ones until I think after the third preseason game. It seemed like last year they sort of eased up on that a little bit, so we'll see. I think I'm gonna say Quincy Williams just because I think at this point they've really got to quickly figure out what he is and how easy of a transition or difficult of a transition this will be for him coming from Murray State. So it's something that they don't like to do, but I think they have to figure this one out pretty quick going into the summer. So I'll say it's Quincy Williams.
Yeah, I think one of them is we don't know Ramique Wilson and Onwale and all these other linebackers they signed. We don't know their best position. We don't know Mike versus Will for all these guys. That's why it's hard to guess, right? It's hard to project that if you don't really know the spots that they're best at playing.
Yeah, I'll be surprised if it's not Quincy Williams tomorrow, which he'll be fun to get a look at. We kind of expect him to, you know, not look like a big NFL linebacking type, but we've heard he's really fast and he likes to hit. So I want to see him, if he does get that position starting.
That seems early to run him out there, though, doesn't it?
But if that's what you think your best plan is, you start now.
Yeah, I mean, even Leon Jacobs, I don't think they ran him with the ones until camp. Now, they knew pretty quickly after mini camp and OTAs, right?
I think he may be the guy actually that I'm thinking that he popped early with the ones.
Oh, very early. He's one of the earliest ones I've ever seen.
Okay. Yeah.
But I think it was camp before he was with the ones. I don't think it was OTAs or minicamp.
It might have been.
Yeah, he was really early. Yeah. It was last year.
Because that was the conversation we were having. It's like here they didn't let Leonard Fournette run ahead of Chris Ivory in practice until they were really close to the Giants opener. Or not Giants opener. Houston opener.
Yeah.
And Cam Robinson was the same way. They still had Josh Wells as their starting left tackle. Deep into that camp, and so that's why it was so surprising when Leon Jacobs ran with the one so quick.
So
my guess is maybe they're beyond that, but again, maybe that's Maroon and Coughlin saying, look, maybe that was part of it. We talk about everything here is earned in terms of the competition, and we did that year one, and we had a great year, and we strayed away from that last year. Not to say that that's the direct correlation as to why they went 5-11, but if you're a coach and you're looking for any way to get back to 2017, any sort of minor detail, maybe that will be one. But I think at the end of the day, they've got to figure out the outside linebacker spot pretty quick. So I think the third round pick, Quincy Williams, probably gets the first.
Typically, a will linebacker is a hair smaller than a big physical middle linebacker. So heights and weights aren't going to tell you. Renique, as far as the new guys that came in, Ramique Wilson is 6'2", 238. James Onwalu is 6'1", 235. DJ Alexander is 6'2", 233. So essentially they're all the same size. Those guys are all the same. Quincy Williams is a little smaller. But those three guys are essentially clones.
And there really is no in-house option because they cut Blair Brown. They cut, who else?
Donald Payne.
So, I mean, a couple guys that were backups last year – And in Brown's case was a draft pick, they've been let go. So there isn't that, well, you started the rookie who just got here from Murray State over the guy that's been in the locker room for the last 3 years, who's worked his way up on practice squad. So they don't have that. I mean, all those guys just arrived. So it might make it easier for them to put in a rookie in Quincy Williams right away. That will be really interesting to see in terms of what do they do there. And do you see that rotate with the first team? I mean, the first team will come out, and then they'll bring in the backups, and then eventually they'll get back. They're going to do 7-on-7. They're going to do 11-on-11. So you'll get a sense of the first team reps in a lot of different areas and situations. Do they mix it up? Does Quincy Williams get all the first team work? That wouldn't mean – that it's locked in, they could come back on Thursday and say, well, this is the day that we wanted to give Wilson all the first team reps at outside linebacker. But it really will be fascinating to see how they manage that Telvin Smith void in terms of filling it.
Yeah, in all likelihood, Leon Jacobs and Nick DeLuca are 1 and 2 on the strong side. They're the two guys. They're big. They're the guys most likely to line up over the tight end. Miles Jack, in all likelihood, it stays at Mike for now. So you got your two guys at the strong side, I think. You got your starting Mike linebacker. Then I think the combination of all those other guys, whether it's Najee Good or whether it's Ramique Wilson or whether it's Onwalu or whether it's DJ Alexander, those guys, along with Quincy Williams, are either the backup to Miles or the starter backup a week. And what you just said might be right. They may just rotate them all in and out. Tomorrow's an OTA. I'm guessing you're only going to teach Quincy Williams one position. I don't think they're going to cross-train Miles Jack. Remember, he's already played two positions. He's played strong in Mike. Do you really want to have to train him at a third position? So I'm guessing the more I think about it, that Miles stays in the middle. Jacobs and DeLuca stay strong side. Quincy Williams learns the weak side. And then those other four guys, based on how Quincy does. So those are the things we'll watch. It'll be a lot of fun. Tomorrow we'll be out there. We'll talk more. We're here till 7 o'clock tonight. We're going to talk a great deal more about Jaguars, about OTAs, and a lot of things to watch. All that comes up in a bit. Talk college football coming up a little bit later on. The college magazines are out. Got a thought or two about that. But let's get it to hardball. More teams are using the opener. I got a thought or two about that. And who's winning and losing? I saw a stat about the Marlins. It's much to my friend Dan Hicken's chagrin, I guess, is why I saw it, that amazed me. We'll talk about it after this. Stay with us. Hey, Gibster.
Yes, sir.
Can I thank you publicly?
Sure.
I'll take 4 out of 6.
I love it.
Against the Brewers and the Cardinals.
That's a statement for the Braves.
I'll take that. I'll take that. And, Hayes, I know you were wondering this, but that Pittsburgh Baseball Club established in 1887, 7-4 in that trip.
7-4.
Pretty. You know what? I am very happy about that. 3-4 in San Diego, or San Diego, however you want to say it. Very pleased with my team. 20 guys on the IL, top three pitchers, the whole outfield. Four games over. Have played 10 more games away from home than home, just so you know. I count this stuff, okay? Just so you know.
I would, too.
So I'm very pleased with
Josh Bell leading the NL and really tied for the lead in the majors.
Yeah, 44 RBI. How's he doing? Hey, how's that Josh Bell working on that fantasy team, Gibster?
He is carrying my team right now.
Yeah, I made the point. I was going to get through this topic about George Springer. I think he's one of the best players in baseball. Nobody talks about it. He's a really good player. And Brooks and I saw the guy today wearing an Astros T-shirt, which was a George Springer shirt. And I said, yeah, I was going to do a topic about Springer because he's so good. He's the best player of baseball nobody knows about. Lauren made a good point. Josh Bell might be the best player that nobody knows about because I forget nobody knows about him because I know so much about him.
Right.
You know, I watch him every swing, you know, but he might be the guy that, that –
Did you tell Gibby to put him on the fantasy or
I did
you already know that?
No, I've been watching Josh Bell and I watched him in spring training and I said, I'm about to pick this guy up before people figure out who he is and how good he is. The guy won the NL Player of the Month – of the week, actually. Four home runs in the last week and batting .407.
And I watched every one of them. Gibby, they are bombs. He's hit four ball. He has 10 home runs that are 400 feet or more. That's astounding. 10 of them. And the exit velocity is always 105, 110. So he's a really good player. But here's my topic. So because I watched all these Pirates games. So Saturday, the Pirates use an opener, which I think is gross. But I want to watch it, okay? Morgan DeRapal, got it just called up. Gibby, have you watched teams that use openers? Lauren, you've obviously watched opener games,
yeah.
Right? Gibby, have you watched opener games?
I have.
Hayes, have you watched a game and use an opener?
No.
I had never watched a game start to finish where a team used an opener, okay? And now who did? The Yankees did it?
The Yankees did it. The Rangers also did it this weekend, at least two of them.
All right, well, I'll make this prediction. The opener will be dead by the end of this year. Write that down and tell me I'm an idiot if it doesn't happen. The opener will be dead by the end of this year.
Good.
It's only a year old.
Yeah, it'll be dead by the end of this year.
The first time the Rays did it was May 19th a year ago.
Yeah, and you know this if you follow the Rays. They've got a ton of pitchers on the IL, okay? They've called up a bunch of guys.
They've had catchers go on the IL a lot too.
But that's not that isn't affected by this. But so the Pirates used an opener Saturday, and they won the game. You know how many pitchers pitched in that game?
Six.
There's seven. You have you have five starters and seven bullpen guys. Most people use a 12-man staff. Okay. Seven. You have seven guys in your bullpen. The only guy that didn't pitch was the closer, Vasquez. The other six pitched. There's no chance you can survive a season like that. No chance. You'll have more guys on the IL than ever. You know how many people were on the IL? How many Major League Baseball players as of this morning were on the IL? Take a guess. Major League Baseball players that went on the IL. Take a guess. Shot in the dark.
240.
234. Boy, that's a really good guess. 234. That's an amazingly good guess. 234. How many are pitchers?
Out of 234, 167.
190. 190. 190 pitchers have been on the IL. It's May 20th.
But that makes sense to me because we always talk about the issues that pitchers have.
Yeah.
Other than guys on your team and guys on the Yankees, most of their position players don't get hurt playing baseball.
You're right. Not at this level.
Right.
But I'm just telling you, it'll be dead. The opener thing will be dead by the end of this year. It has to be. It has to be. Pitchers can't hold up. And pitchers already are getting Tommy John all the time. Because, and I read something, I've always said this, and I will now maintain this more than ever before, and I was so involved in travel baseball, and I don't want my travel buddies to get mad at me here, but I read something over the weekend that made all the sense in the world. Back in the day, you've heard me say this 1,000 times. I've said it too much. You folks that have heard me say it are probably bored with it, and I apologize, but I'm going to say it again. I don't care. I love baseball, and I love everything about it. Back in the day, you played baseball in the spring and maybe the summer, right? Then kids played football or soccer or whatever, okay, in the fall. Then they played basketball in the winter. And then they started picking up a baseball again and played baseball again in the spring until the summer was out. Now what happens is you play baseball in the spring and in the summer. You play on your travel team. And again, I'm not ripping travel. Please don't think that. It's just my opinion. Then you play two seasons. Then you play fall baseball. And you know what you do in between there? You go to your individual pitching coach, your pitching guru who teaches you how to do it. And so you're throwing more bullpens, and you're throwing, and you're throwing, and you're throwing, and you're throwing, and you're throwing. And what's the one thing to get you signed and drafted? One thing. Velo. Velocity gets you signed and drafted. So what's that pitching guru's got? He's got that personal pitching coach has one goal. What's his one goal?
Make you faster.
Make you throw harder. That's the one goal. And arms are blowing up left and right. And now and because of that, pitchers can't throw into the seventh inning anymore. So let's come up with it. I'm telling you, it's going to be dead. Give me agree or disagree with everything I just said. I think it's going to be dead.
I totally agree. And I'll say this. The reason the Rangers used an opener was because they have Jose Leclerc, who they signed a big extension to in the offseason. They removed him from the closer's role. In fact, it was because of the game he blew against your Pirates, Frank.
Right.
They removed him of the closer's role after that game. And now they've really just been trying to experiment with him to try to give him some more confidence. So they used him as an opener. But I do agree. I think this is very interesting. I took a screenshot of this tweet the other day. Jimmy Nelson is a pitcher coming off of a severe shoulder injury with the Milwaukee Brewers. He's about to come back up to the Major League Club, and he tweets a lot about what you're just talking about. And people keep asking, when is he coming back? And they keep asking, what's his velo? What's his velocity? And he will tweet anybody to say velocity is a bad measuring stick to find out how good a pitcher is. And he's still throwing in the mid-90s. I think he tore his rotator cuff.
He did. Nelson did a rotator. That's exactly right. That's a great point. So I too predict that. One other thing, because I teased this before I went to break. The Marlins swept the Mets. 3-game sweep. Did you know it's the first three? You play 160 games a year. You play 324 games over 2 years. It's the first 3-game sweep by the Marlins since 2017.
That's remarkable.
It's a remarkable stat. I mean, I baseball stats don't shock me. They don't. Gibby, were you floored by that stat?
Yeah, I mean, it's
2 years since they've had a 3-game sweep.
See, it doesn't surprise me because we've watched them implode. We talked to Jessica Blaylock, who works for the team, and literally every talented player that they have, they dealt away. Can anyone name anyone on that roster? So it doesn't surprise me that they're that bad.
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you. I get
I'm
it.
I'm sure they've won 2-game series.
But
they just
still,
haven't swept with all three.
But, I mean, I've followed baseball for 50 years. You always get somewhere along the line, someone limps into town, their starter's down, they've already clinched, or they've brought up the AAA guys, and they're done trying, and I'm telling you, you can't imagine what an amazing stat that is.
Or even a bad team gets hot and becomes a mediocre team for a week and sweeps a bad team.
I mean, it is amazing that they haven't swept anybody. It's amazing. What is their record?
It's 13-31.
10-31 before the sweep.
And this was amazing. I wrote this down Friday before the show. The Marlins at that point, before they swept the Mets, they were 10-31. Every other National League team had 18 or more wins.
18?
They had 10.
How about that? Every other team in the league had 18 wins.
Even after sweeping the Mets, they're still 6 games worse than anyone else in the National League. The Nationals are next at 19 wins.
In the American League, the Royals are 16-31, and the Orioles are 15-31.
And even the and those two teams are terrible teams.
Right, but they
terrible
still have
more. And the Marlins' biggest problem is their offense is brutal.
Right. They
cannot score. You know how many runs they've scored this year? 118. For the season. The next worst, the Tigers have 31 more runs than the Marlins.
That's a great stat, too. It's really amazing to me how bad they are. I of all the baseball, I read all this baseball stuff all the time. That one blew me away. Dan Hicken, God bless you. I'd have buried my team, too. He held a ceremony. He held a funeral today.
Oh, he did?
He buried the Mets.
They're going to fire Callaway.
Yeah, that should have.
They got like 3 hits.
Yeah, if they don't fire.
Over the last 2 games, if they got like 2 hits and 1 hit.
If they don't fire him today, then he's not getting fired. He has a lifetime contract if he doesn't get fired after that thing, so we'll see. Let's talk some college football. A lot more coming up on 1010 XL 92.5 FM.
Welcome back to the Frangie Show. On a beautiful Monday afternoon. I say beautiful because earlier it was pouring, but the sun is back out and shining. We're going to get to college football here in just a second, but I do have a Bunko update
for
you,
man.
Gentlemen, because I know Friday night you couldn't fall asleep.
I was
I didn't tweet anything.
I didn't know what to do.
I was despondent.
I was. You know what I did? I checked CNN, MSNBC, USA Today, Bleacher Report, Deadspin.
Nothing.
I called the next morning. I called Marty Jannetty, the president of the Bunko, Association. Said, Marty, help me. I got to know what happened at Lauren's Bunko game.
Marty's even more well respected than Goodell and all of them. So Marty Jannetty.
He doesn't get booed every time he walks out on the stage.
Did Marty Jannetty have anything for you?
He was busy, but he said he'd work on it, and he was having trouble as well, which. Okay. You guys need to work on that.
So I didn't get home till closer to midnight, so I really didn't think y'all were still awake. And if you were, I didn't think you really cared that much, so I waited till the next morning. But basically, I did the best I have ever done, and Hayes, I attribute it all to you, so thank you.
You're more than welcome.
You can listen to that song, I've Had the Time of My Life, and now you can think about it in terms of me at Bunko on Friday night. I tied for the most wins. Unfortunately, in the sudden death roll-off, I lost. We landed on fours. That's the number that we are going for. I wasn't very good at fours all night long, so I knew the odds were stacked against me when it came to the sudden death roll-off. And I did have people cheering for me, so it was good to have people in my corner, but I lost. But I did win a prize for most Funkos, which means I'm really good at rolling the dice, three of a kind, on the wrong number. So let's say if we're going for fours and I rolled three fives, I get a Funko, but that does not mean I win anything. So alas, I did really well. I did not have any Bunkos, which to have that as many wins as I did, but not have three of a kind on the correct number, that means that I was really grinding. And so I worked very hard and I did come home with a prize. So at least there's that.
Yeah. So
when's the next one?
Yeah.
Well, they have them every month, but as a sub, I'm not invited every month. They have to have somebody.
Well, how do you not become a regular after you almost take home the title?
That's what I want to say.
Because there are 12 members, and then everyone
else.
Well,
somebody has to get relegated.
Subs. That's happened recently, but moving past that, they're very committed. I'm not nearly as committed, and so I just sub whenever it's convenient for me, when somebody else can't make it. So there you go. You want to get to some college football?
No, I don't. I want to know, is there a power poll of any kind? And have you made the power poll?
I might have jumped up in the standings of the subs, but as far as the regular members, probably.
Is there like a 30 for 30 coming on this?
There will be.
So
you'll be directing it.
What was the reaction when you lost in sudden death? Were you like, oh, well, this is the furthest I've ever come? So,
no.
Or were you like super livid?
I mean, I wasn't mad, but I was disappointed in myself. Yes, absolutely. I wanted that win. I wanted the $40, Hayes. I mean, it's all fake money, you know. But
I get it. It's the triumph.
I really wanted it.
Doesn't matter.
I came so close. It's like climbing to the almost the top of the mountain and then having to come back.
But my question for you, Hayes, because you have a good sense of these things. Obviously, you talked to Marty Jannetty personally. Who wouldn't want to do that? I mean, if I didn't tell you I was jealous, I'd be lying. I mean, Marty Jannetty on the phone. Is this Vandy beating Alabama just a one-off, or is this a team that's here to stay?
I think she's figured something out.
Do you?
Yeah, I do. I think I would be surprised if they ever call her again, because I think now they know that this isn't just, some sub that we're going to put in and, is going to be a quick, easy out. This is a serious contender for the crown.
Yeah, I mean, I think it could change the entire landscape of Bunko. I mean, I think the Bunko, I mean, again, the amount of who gets televised, who doesn't. I think, you know who really took notice of this? Can I tell you? Vegas.
That is true.
So I think betting lines will be different a little bit. So there's that.
It was a lot of fun, though. And I do think that your words of encouragement inspired me. A lot of times I'll just start chit-chatting and then I focus less on the actual dice. But this time I really concentrated. I actually, it's funny. So you get on like a roll, right? I mean, pun intended because it's dice. But for real, you can start to like kind of feel it. And then you roll the correct number over and over and over again. And I started to tell the story. Somebody had no idea that I had eye problems. And someone asked me about it. And I started to tell the story of kind of like how it started and all the things I went through. And as I was telling the story, so there's there's one person that's my partner. They're across from me. And the other two people are against me, right? So they're both, as I'm telling the story, like, stop telling the story. You're really doing well. Like, stop trying to jinx me. But as I keep telling the story, I keep rolling well.
Right.
So there's something to that.
Strategy.
Not thinking too much about it.
Does does Susan, friend of the program,
yes.
Is she listening right now?
Probably.
Well, she was she particularly proud of you? Because the word on the street I heard, you can confirm or deny this, I heard she was openly rooting for you and that she wasn't supposed to be.
She's not supposed to be.
Is there any chance she'll face any sort of a fine or suspension?
Probably not a suspension because she's the Bunko secretary, so she would hand out the suspension.
Right.
But certainly, yeah, she got chided a little bit. She was like, come on, LB. And everyone was like, you can't cheer for her. You can't cheer for anybody.
Because
she's kind of running the whole show. But yeah, it was a lot of fun. And again, I thank you for motivating me. Unfortunately, you just didn't motivate Tiger. Maybe Tiger just wasn't.
Have you ever thought about
you'll get there?
Have you ever thought about a second job as a life coach? Is that going to run through your mind?
It has.
Okay, because I'd like to be the guy that markets you.
Okay great.
I think we can find some business.
You're already marketing his son as far as college football goes.
What I think is the way we have helped you is with balance. I always predict you to lose, and he thinks you're going to win, and I think you found the balance.
Even Steven.
So there you go.
There's, valid point. And keep picking me to lose as long as I end up winning the whole dang thing.
I picked her to win everything. She's done it. She's won everything except for our cars, so you've done all right there.
College football in just a few minutes.
Yeah, but when we get to college football, the magazines are out. Have you seen the magazines?
I haven't. But now that I know this,
I
will be stopping on my way home.
Yeah, they're all out. I got a thought or two about the impact of the magazines and what they are saying. It's all coming up. Stay with us. Hey, thanks for joining us on the program. Glad you're along for the ride on a Monday with Carlyon Brooks and Andrew Gibson. I'm Frank Frangie. The magazines are out. Athlon's, Lindy's, Street and Smith are all available. Sporting News to come. Phil Steele to come. Gators are in the top 10 of all of them. I got a thought about that, but beforehand.
How do you know this?
I saw it online.
Somebody scooped the mag.
Somebody tweeted it.
Because you don't have the magazines
yet.
I do not.
I went and looked for them. Lauren and I went and looked for them today. They were not there. I'm very unhappy about that. Really kind of ruined my Monday. Until the Bunko story. Now I'm back to good. But up until Marty Jannetty and the Bunko story. Marty Jannetty may be my favorite person of all time. That may be my favorite moment in radio history. He's not the Marty Jannetty. I can't quit laughing.
Is that
about
a real person?
He's really disappointed.
Yes, it's
what's going
name.
On at that
no, it's
chapter.
Not a made-up name. He's the head of Bunko. Yeah. How do you not know this? Why do you not know these things?
He just came up with
he
it.
He got
like
his
quickly.
Doctorate at Arkansas State.
Well, and kind of like it's the Bunko capital, Arkansas. Ask Rue that. She'll tell you. She grew up playing Bunko.
She did?
Yes.
Bunko is named after a town in Arkansas.
When I asked Tammy Talley
Bunko,
if she
Arkansas.
Ever played Bunko, she goes, ugh, no, I'm not 70.
That's exactly what she said. Number one, do the magazines mean less because everything's online?
Yes, but I still love them.
How about you?
You scooped the magazines, so of course they mean less. That's why I was asking how you knew, because I knew you didn't have them yet.
But I will say this. I think what the magazines have done is they figured that part out. So obviously they put it on their own website.
Sure.
But I also think they try and get more innovative than they were. Before they did team previews, and that was it. Team previews and the girls, the spread of the girls and their and the cheerleader, the best cheerleaders, and that was it. Now they were ahead of the curve in getting the opposing coach, the anonymous opposing coach.
Love that.
I do too, because it's one of the best things in the magazines. They also they break down position groups. I mean, I don't know. I couldn't tell you where the Ole Miss wide receivers rank in the SEC West, but you can't. So I think you see my point. I think they've tried to, because they know people don't wait with bated breath for the print version quite as much as they used to. I think they still do. My friend Brent Beard has made it an art form to wait on it, and I'm right with him on that. But because people don't wait with the same bated breath, they've had to do more, and I think they have. So for me, there's still pretty good value to these things.
Yeah, and again, to me, it's a handy tool. I mean, you keep it, and you have a you're talking with a buddy, and Kentucky comes up, and you're like, hey, hang on, I've referenced magazines a million times in my life, either talking to my dad or just buddies or whoever. I mean, so I think they're fun to hang on to for a few weeks into the year, and I like to see kind of how accurate they are on their predictions. And But to me, it's a fun read. It helps me certainly learn a lot about the other teams in the South. And what else am I going to read? War and Peace? You know, Crime and Punishment? No, I'm going to read about the SEC football and what kind of a year it's going to be. So, to me, I really like them. They have certainly lost some value with the internet. I mean, in the 90s, it was like as soon as they were out, it would be, alert everybody. The magazines are out, and you'd go and immediately see where they would have the Gators ranked and everybody. But I still think that they're fun, and I think they're a great resource.
Have you ever read A Walk in the Woods, that hilarious book by Bill Bryson?
I have not.
It is if you ever really do want a book to read, it is freaking hilarious. It's this kind of overweight guy that decides he's going to hike the Appalachian Trail, and he has no idea what he's doing, and it kind of goes through. It's a real life thing, and it goes through his trials and tribulations. It is really funny, but to the point
it
of
sounds
the,
funny.
To the point well, of the
we're
college,
not going to read that when the magazines come out. Maybe in September.
Well, you're definitely not going to read it in September. That's college football. But no, what I love about the magazines is I do not read really anything other than maybe Twitter on my phone. I don't, with my eyesight, I honestly prefer, when I do read books, I read hardback or paperback books. I want the physical things. I don't read on an iPad or Kindle or anything like that. So with the magazines, I love to go to the beach and take the physical magazine and read it. It's way better to me than reading, especially squinting, looking at my phone.
And I do that. And by that is a go-to lay by my pool at the beach. But now more by that's a go-to for me now. That'll be the next two or three weekends. Sit by the pool, turn on the music. I don't know why. I guess I equate sitting by. I mean, you go to the beach a lot.
Yes.
We go to the beach some. I'm more sit by the pool. But I guess because of the time of year they come out, that's really pool time or beach time, whatever. So I'll do that too. The other part of this topic is, it almost seems to me, the magazines confirm the expectations. You know, I think they're now confirmed for me. The magazine, Florida's in the top 10 of every one of these. Now it's on. Now, you say, well, the coaches poll, I mean, the AP poll, the coaches poll, and, of course, the poll that comes out in midseason, the playoff poll is the one that matters. Now, I get that. But in the court of public opinion, once you start popping up in top tens that everybody sees, now you're ready. The Gators will sneak up on nobody. It's hard to believe the University of Florida, as big and prominent as it was in the Spurrier era and the Urban era, could ever sneak up on anybody. But they did last year. They did sneak up on people. Nobody saw that coming. Remember that even? And then losing early to Kentucky, if you ever thought maybe, just maybe, well, then it was definitely over. Then nobody thought. And so for the rest of the year, they snuck up on people. Well, that's over. The sneaking up on is over. So the whole paradigm of Florida football has, I'm not going to say it's changed back to the Urban era, but they're not going to surprise anybody. But like Will Muschamp in 2013, after the big 2012 season, it's really important that they're good this year. They now face the, okay, we saw you, and we buy it. We're going to take you from unranked to start the last few seasons to ranked eighth. But you better be ready, because now we're watching. Don't you sense that?
Absolutely. And it's going to be a challenge for Dan Mullen and his team, to play – Miami and Auburn and LSU and Tennessee and South Carolina and Florida State and Georgia. It's an incredibly challenging schedule. Missouri has given them a lot of trouble. You can't go through Florida's schedule and not mention Missouri after how well they've played against Florida recently. So there's a lot of games on Florida's schedule that are losable games. Now, having said that, there's probably only two in which people would be somewhat surprised if they won, and that will be the game here against the Bulldogs and the game in Death Valley at LSU. So it's a schedule where they need to go 9-3 minimum, ideally 10-2, and then anything above that I think would be exceeding expectations for where the program is in year two.
Yeah, there's no question that Felipe Franks is now facing the first season of extreme pressure. Dan Mullen, I think, faced a lot of that last year because he had won titles with the Gators as the offensive coordinator. But certainly now it's time for Franks to prove it. And I think the Gators are talented enough to be in the top 10. What's interesting to me is that LSU is ranked ahead of them. I don't know that I would put LSU at 7, but they certainly will face off, so we'll find out a lot more about that. And Georgia 3rd, obviously a testament to what Kirby Smart's done.
We will take a break when we come back. We're going to stay on college football. A former Seminole quarterback has found a home, I guess. We'll discuss it after this. So quarterbacks go to the portals all the time, and they go here and there, and everybody's always looking for a quarterback. Everybody. Everybody wants a quarterback. They're hard as hell to find. Bruce Feldman's tremendous story on Miami. I don't know if you guys read that or not in The Athletic about the rebuilding of Manny Diaz's rebuilding of Miami and why it got away from him. But we all saw the quote, right? The Alonzo Highsmith quote?
Yes.
Which was the quote about swag, which is fantastic. Swag isn't how your hair – I'll get it wrong. But swag isn't – Lauren, if you find it, you can read it. But it's not about what kind of haircut you have or if you're a five-star. It's about how you work and how committed you are. And but even in that story, it said the key now more than ever is you got to find the quarterback. I don't care what offense you run. I don't care if you're running, passing, option, RPO, whatever. You gotta find the quarterback. In this age when it's impossible to find quarterbacks year after year after year after year, DeAndre Francois was a guy ticketed for the NFL by everybody. Everybody thought this guy was going to be a big armed guy. Everybody, remember that? This was the talk. 6'2", 215. Remember how tough he was? He kept taking hits the 1 year and kept getting up. And he had that lightning quick release and that big arm, and he was athletic. He's walking on at FAU. Now, I don't doubt that if he commits himself that Lane Kiffin will make him pretty good because Kiffin's a good coach. Nobody would offer him a scholarship. All these teams that don't have quarterbacks. What a surprising, surprising story.
It really is, and it must speak to, I'm assuming, his baggage. Because as a football player, he's absolutely a Division I scholarship quarterback. I mean, he's thrown 36 touchdowns at the collegiate level in a very tough conference. You mentioned his toughness in the pocket. I mean, any coach would love to have that out of their quarterback. So to me, it doesn't make sense unless there is some real issues off the field for DeAndre Francois that's scaring off teams from wanting to, give up one of their precious scholarships to bring him in. Because, I mean, I think he would help probably 90 of the Division I teams that are out there. So the fact that he's walking on at FAU is astonishing to me from a talent standpoint.
Yeah, I think it shows clearly that colleges are not willing a lot of times to give a scholarship to someone with that extreme of character issues. Because remember, it's not just the Instagram post of the ex-girlfriend. There's other drug issues that he's dealt with in the past. This is a kid who was probably going to be the starter at FSU and decided to leave. And at this point is going to a program that is nowhere near the talent of FSU. And you look at it, they've had several quarterbacks. FSU has had several quarterbacks not able to finish there. DeAndre Johnson, before him, the kid that ended up, who's now at FAU with DeAndre Francois, James, begins with a C, I can picture it. He was
where,
on.
Where was he?
He was at FSU also. He ended up at the on the TV show in the East Mississippi Community College. I'll figure
oh,
out. He's now at FAU with DeAndre Francois.
Okay. Anyway, but back to your point, as you look this up, there's got to be. I mean, Rice can't use him. I mean, Temple can't use him. I mean, are you kidding me? There's
what
got
about like Georgia Tech? As you make this move back to a normal offense?
Well, my first thought was Georgia Tech, NC State, Ole Miss, that group, okay? Okay, for whatever reason, they got their guy. But the next level, Arkansas State, Louisiana Tech, they won't offer him a scholarship?
Yeah.
I mean, if you – what in the world – there's got to be a major story going on. Now, look, maybe there's a family issue and he doesn't feel like he can leave the state. There may be – I don't pretend to know everything about this, But this is a – I was floored by it. You talk about what's Florida. I'll make it right now to what Florida is, brought to you by the Kitchen Flooring Design Center. A Kitchen Flooring Design Center is located on Southside Boulevard. They're a beautiful showroom. Head over there for your floors, your kitchens, anything you need, your bathrooms. They've done all ours. They're fantastic. The Kitchen Flooring Design Center on Southside Boulevard. We always tell you what floors us, brought to you by that company. I am floored by this. I am absolutely, undeniably floored by this, and I think there's got to be a story in an age when it's so hard to find quarterbacks. That's the point. Isn't he pretty good? No, you loved him way more than Blackman.
I still think as a player, he's a very good player. I think it's been tough. He had the injury. I thought his redshirt freshman year, he was outstanding.
I did too.
And obviously, then he has the injury year. Where he hurts the knee in the first game against Alabama. And then last year, I didn't put a lot of that on DeAndre Francois. I thought most of the struggles last year were Willie Taggart's scheme and the offensive line issues that they had. To me, it wasn't so much on DeAndre Francois. So, but obviously, I'm in the minority because I, and again, I have no idea what – people in Tallahassee say about him and what, you know, if you're a coach and you call over there and say, hey, you know, I'm the offensive coordinator at UTEP and we're interested in reaching out to DeAndre Francois. But before we do, I just wanted to call and get, you know, I mean, if I'm assuming they, you know, they're giving a pretty negative profile of him.
There has to be something really bad for nobody to offer the guy a scholarship. And again, maybe he had scholarship offers, and he's moved to South Florida, and he wants to stay close to home. There could be a thousand.
I wonder almost if FAU is like, just come here. We need you to come here for one semester,
right?
On as a walk on, and then we're going to be able to make the numbers work to get you on scholarship.
Yeah, maybe
like that might make some sense. Yeah. I don't know if Kiffin is commenting.
Although I gotta believe he's only trying to play one semester anyway, because he's gonna try to go to the combine. But I was convinced if worse comes to worse, he'd be the starter at Eastern Kentucky. At first I thought he transferred it, like you said, Georgia Tech, NC State, Ole Miss, Tulsa, that level of school.
He has 2 years of eligibility left, so if he doesn't obviously do anything right away. I just wonder if it's an attitude thing. You know, Lane Kiffin meets with him and he's like, well, I deserve a scholarship because I was a starting quarterback at FSU. And then the coach says, well, here's the opportunity. It's walk on for now. Also, by the way, prove that you're not going to get into any sort of other off the field issues. By the way, John Franklin III. It was not James and it was not a C.
Okay.
I just made it up. But that's what I wonder.
Is John Franklin at FAU?
Yes.
Oh, I didn't
so
know
he
that.
And
I know
he and DeAndre Francois are now.
I know he's at the junior college. I didn't know he's at FAU. Okay.
Yeah, he went. I think he went to Auburn after that, and then now
that's
he's going
right.
to FAU.
Okay.
So he's been all over the place. But I think Taggart during the offseason last year was saying some things about DeAndre Francois' attitude right when he got there, and so there's got to be more to the story.
There has to be. It's an amazing story. We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll get it back to NFL football. The Jags are on the field tomorrow, OTA. Those in the media, those of us, we get to take a little peek at them, give you an idea on tomorrow's show of what we saw. What to look for. Hayes Carlion has a terrific column on 1010XL.com. We'll talk to you more about that column. I'll let Hayes take you through what he's going to be watching and a handful of other things. It all comes up. Let's talk Jaguars football after this on 1010XL and 92.5 FM. Tomorrow, the Jags will be on the field again. That's just a media-only event. But it gives us an opportunity to take a look-see and see what we can see and then certainly share with you what we can. As the Jags are on the field, it starts tomorrow. A number of workouts, 10 total OTA practices. They begin tomorrow. Hayes has a column on 1010XL.com, what he will watch and why. Hayes, you talk about Foles replacing Telvin, some of the young guys, essentially.
Yeah, and again, I always think it's good to just sort of share the ground rules for what they can do, because it's confusing. There's, you know, phase one, phase two, phase three. So OTAs, when you actually can get out there on the field and run some extensive stuff, is phase three. So these practices are all still voluntary. There is no live contact, but the coaches can conduct 7-on-7, 11-on-11 drills. The players are in helmets, but they're not wearing shoulder pads. So anyway, it gives you an idea. The players can be at the facility for 6 hours a day. That's up from 4 hours during the first two phases. So, you know, you'll see a little bit more focus. I think this is where it sort of kicks in is, okay, now we're actually doing some things. I think it gets to be a little bit more serious when it's 11-on-11, even when there's no contact. To me, it's Nick Foles. I mean, you want to be able to see a guy that looks like a significant upgrade over Blake Bortles, who was never a great practice player, even the year in 2017 when he had by far his best year. He was awful in camp. I mean, he lost his job to Chad Henne for a few days. So I think you want to come away saying, you know, Foles looks crisp, looks in command, is what Doug Marrone wanted. When Doug talked at the combine prior to Foles's signing with the Jaguars, saying, I want the quarterback to be the guy everybody looks to for the answers. Well, Nick Foles should be that guy. He's got a big-time head start on the offense with new offensive coordinator John DeFilippo, his quarterback's coach with the Eagles. So that should all be there. So that's the number one thing that I think you look to see. Certainly want to see who goes in first for Telvin Smith. Not that that means that's who's going to go in first when Patrick Mahomes comes to town, but it'll give us some idea of how they're going to navigate a post-Telvin Smith defense. I'm looking forward to seeing the injured guys that are returning. Marquise obviously won't do anything. I think the timeline on that Doug Marrone put for Marquise a few months ago was late in the preseason, so he won't do anything at this time. But we need to see Cam Robinson, and does he look good? You know, how does his agility look coming off the torn ACL? Jake Ryan is a newcomer here, but he tore his ACL really early in camp last year with Green Bay. So I'd like to see what Jake Ryan can do. Hopefully he's able to at least do something. And then you've got guys like Andrew Norwell, Brandon Linder, Ronnie Harrison, guys that finished up on IR that with less severe injuries. So it would be good to see those guys out there. Really, though, the big one is the draft headliners. I mean, you think about how little the Jaguars got out of last year's rookie class, and that was by design. They were drafting for the future, not so much the present, in Taven Bryan, DJ Chark, and Ronnie Harrison. But that can't happen again. I mean, this draft was a draft for instant impact. Those three last year, Bryan, Chark, and Harrison, combined to play 920 offensive or defensive snaps. Harrison was the highest at 328. That number with Josh Allen, Juwan Taylor, and Josh Oliver, this year's first three picks, that number needs to spike to 2,100 snaps. And that's a conservative estimate. That's giving each of them a couple of games missed. But that just gives you an idea of how little they got by design out of last year's rookie class. So you want to see Josh Allen. We saw him a couple weeks ago at rookie minicamp. He looked, you know, from a physical standpoint, certainly looked the part. It'll be fun to see, what do they ask him to do? Is it primarily the Dante Fowler role, or do we see him play a little bit of linebacker? With Juwan Taylor, you just want to see a guy who looks like he can be a steady right tackle. So again, you're looking at movement more than physicality at this stage. And then Frank, you hit it with Josh Oliver. I mean, if he throws a block, great. But you want to see him make strong catches, showcase a big catch radius, which is something that they talked about that they liked on tape. And the receivers as well, as you mentioned. I mean, we'll start to get an answer to the question of how much was the passing failure solely on Blake Bortles. Now that Nick Foles is here, it will dispel the theory or prove the theory that the receiving core was unimpressive because they were held back by a subpar passer. If Foles is legit, then you should see a difference in D.D. Westbrook, Chark, Keelan Cole. Those guys are young, so they should get better anyway, but you could see a radical change for the better because they're young, and now they've got what the Jaguars believe is a much better quarterback. And then Chris Conley as well, just because he has a history with Foles. So it'll be interesting to see if you can tell that they have a prior past and how well they're able to connect.
Yeah, absolutely. My eyes probably won't leave Nick Foles very long. I might look over to see if the wide receiver, the tight end, catches the football, but mainly my eyes will be on Nick Foles tomorrow, and certainly some of the defense and what they do at those key positions. Any chance we see Jalen Ramsey and Yannick Ngakoue tomorrow?
You're not going to see Jalen. I think probably neither. You're not going to see Jalen. I don't think you see either guy.
Jalen was tweeting today that that things are about to get real, and so I wondered if that meant he's done, you know, sitting back in Tennessee, and he might be here.
And to my eyes, I'm good either way.
Sure.
To my eyes, I want to see D.D. Westbrook tomorrow. I want to see D.J. Chark tomorrow. I want to see if D.J. Chark looks like a more natural pass catcher than at least he looked like to me last year. I want to see if there's a little more size. Is Westbrook thicker? Does he look a little more – does he look older? Does his body look like it's matured a little bit? I want to see that. I want to see – and I know it's been 1 year. I get it. I want to see those pass catchers. I want to see that. I still hold out great hope for Leonard Fournette. You can't tell a whole lot by a running back at an OTA. You know what else I want to see? And I don't know how you see this, but there is a sense of rhythm. Tom Coughlin talked about it. We played the interview. The boys this morning had him on the air, and he talked about how Nick Foles got with Fournette as soon as he got here and made sure he understood various things they're doing. I don't have a good enough eye to tell you whether they were all on the same page or not in previous OTAs, but I'm really going to watch that. I want to watch how, to your point about Foles, Lauren, I'm going to watch him too. When the ball leaves his hand, you're going to watch that receiver, right? You're going to follow the ball, right? So,
of course.
But I want to watch how he manages huddles. I want to watch him when other quarterbacks are playing. I want to watch him as he's working with DeFilippo. I want to see how much time he spends with his receivers. If a receiver breaks off a route a little early or a little late, how much – that kind of stuff. I just feel like there's the worst cliche in sports. He's a coach on the floor. He's a coach on the field. Well, there's some truth to it, though, right? I want to kind of see that. I want to see how much of that – I don't know. I want to watch him coach those guys. Even the pictures you see on Twitter, right, are him working with somebody.
Oh, absolutely. And last night at the Tom Coughlin, Jay Fun Gala – he, instead of just getting announced, he carried down one of the girls
who is suffering
because she's dealing with cancer and fighting cancer. So, yeah, I mean, I think everything off the field Nick Foles has done exactly correct. And tomorrow is our first chance to see if everything he's going to do on the field is the same.
You go first. Give me – we'll do this a few times. One player you will watch, and it can't be Foles. One guy.
I will say Josh Oliver.
Give me one guy you will watch, and it can't be Foles.
I will say D.D. Westbrook.
All right, I'll go D.J. Chark. Go again.
I'll go defense, and I'll go Miles Jack to see where he plays.
Okay. Go again.
On defense, I will go with Quincy Williams.
Okay. I will go Josh Allen. Go again.
I will say Fournette.
Okay. Just to see shape he's in, whatnot.
Just to see everything, how he's getting along with teammates, what he does when he's not on during drills and during the 7-on-7s. Just to watch him overall to see what his attitude looks like.
One more time.
Conley.
Okay, Chris Conley, to see what he's got. I'll go Oliver as my third guy. So my three guys are going to be Chark, Oliver, Allen. Okay, just to see how athletic they look, how if they fit the part. How the team looks different with all those that kind of newness. You know what I mean? There's newness there, so it'll be interesting for me to see how it looks. So we'll see. All right, other things in the NFL. Peter King had a terrific column today. He always does. But did you read it, Hayes?
Yes.
You read it, right, Lauren?
Of course.
The 25.
So I start my Monday morning every Monday.
I do too. And because I'm a slow reader, I start reading about 7:30 or 8, and I get it done right about showtime. So, I mean, it's the longest column ever, isn't it?
It is long. I thought today's didn't take that long.
It was a little shorter, but...
But maybe that's because at 25. Times, too, I read the headlines or the kind of the subject.
You didn't read the whole column.
I didn't read every word.
Yeah, but he talked to 25 people about how he would... What changes they would make. If you could make a change... If you could change the NFL, and people in the know, people that somehow, whether it's broadcasters or coaches or what. What stood out? What one or two stood out to you?
Well, certainly because Calais Campbell is featured in it.
Yeah.
I found his interesting. He said, make every healthy player active on game day.
Great point.
That will help to reduce injuries. I think that's a very smart idea.
Well, it got me thinking when he said that, why would you not do that? It's not, you're not saving money. Why are all 53 not active?
They do it as competitive balance, figuring that, you know, okay, this team might have six guys that are legitimately out for the game. This team might only have one guy that's legitimately out for the game. So to try and balance it, each team has to declare seven guys that won't play. Because it's very rare that you end up with seven injured guys. There's almost all, I mean, a lot of times it's maybe two injured guys, five healthy scratches. So that's why they do it.
So everybody will play the game with the same amount.
Right. If you allowed everybody to, and I'd have no problem with doing away with the inactives, but I think the way they look at it is you'll end up with one team that might have 52 players and another team that might have 46 players.
Makes sense, because you don't have a taxi squad to call up. You the way to end that is you'd have to have a taxi squad, which is essentially what the inactives are. I like it. I like that idea. What else? What are those 25? What else jumped in? Anything jump out?
I think everything should be reviewable. And you know, that was one that Dean Blandino had. And I know Bill Belichick's a big proponent of it as well. You know, I just think if something is egregious and you're giving the coaches the two challenges, I'm not suggesting give them more, but if you're going to give them two challenges, then they should be able to challenge whatever they want to challenge. And so, you know, I would be fine with everything being reviewable.
Yeah, I would too. I love the onside kick recommendation that you go for a first down. And there were so many people, I don't remember who said what, but one of the people he asked said onside. One of the people said make onside kicks. I think Booger McFarland said make onside kicks real again, where people colliding into each other. I don't like that. But I like the person who suggested fourth and 10, have a 10-yard play. Somebody else suggested do it near the goal line. I wouldn't do that. But I would have – and I would make it 15 – is it 15 yards? I think 15 yards is where they start at the 35 and you got to get to the 50. And if you do, you keep the ball. I think that's the best recommendation anybody has made about football in a long, long time. Talk about making it more exciting.
Well, it was Scott Hansen who, of
is
course,
that it was?
Yeah, for Red Zone, wants everything in those last few minutes to be that thrilling.
Of all the ones, that's the one I would put that in play for every level of football at any time during the game. You start at your own 35-yard line, and if you can make 15 yards, you keep the ball. Every level of football, I mean, after a score. I mean, make it, take it's great, right? So if you don't want to do it, then you better stop them. If you can't stop a 15-yard play, and if you stop a 15-yard play, you get great field position. And if it's an incomplete pass, you get it at their 35. If you tackle them at the 47, you get the ball at their 47. I would run that. I would probably do that. That's the best recommendation. Well, was it an AAF guy or an XFL guy? We talked about it on the air. One of them came up with it.
I think it was XFL.
Because the AAF was about done when we talked about that. I thought that was the best recommendation anybody made. But I wouldn't do it just at the end of the game. I wouldn't do it once or twice a game. If you score a touchdown, you can either kick it off, and again, I know we're headed to no kickoffs for safety reasons. The game would just feel too much, just the feel of the game, it would feel too much like a scrimmage to me if you literally started on the 25 and they never kicked off. Don't you think?
Yes.
It just wouldn't feel right. I at some point, how it feels has got to matter. And it wouldn't seem like it. You feel that way or no? You wouldn't care?
No, I understand where you're coming from. But if it truly does, if we've studied enough that the kickoffs are very dangerous, then I understand where they're coming from.
I do too. And there, by the way, there's no denying that. Let me give you some of the other ones. Rick Goslin says, help defenses by extending the bump zone. So you can, instead of riding the guy 5 yards, you can ride him 10 yards. In college football, you can ride him until the ball's in the air. Agree or disagree with that one?
No, I'm fine. I like the offense, so I think I wouldn't change that.
Agree or disagree?
I agree because, like he says, they don't have that rule in high school football or college football.
Yeah, I'm okay. I would probably let him ride him a little bit longer. Blandino says every play reviewable. We all agree. Do you agree with that? I agree with Hayes on it. Do you agree with that?
Yes. I think that's what we talked about is let the coaches challenge anything. And Then that way, plus if you don't increase the challenges, it doesn't slow it down. I liked the Chris Nowinski eliminate tackle football until high school.
Yeah. Now that, you know what? I liked it too, Lauren. I'm not smart enough to know. Let me give you the other side of that. And let me be clear about this. I'm not an expert here. But if you can't tackle until high school, Nobody tackles organized football until high school. Could you get hurt worse because you don't know what you're doing? Would there be more head injuries? Because there's got to be something to. Marcus Pollard was on here with us last week, and he said our goal with these youth football players, 7, 8, 9 year old football players, is to teach them before they're too young to get really hurt how to tackle properly, head up, what you're doing. My fear with what you said would be, would there be more injuries? Now, Bishop Kenny, and you went to Bishop Kenny, is a good example. An awful lot of players at Bishop Kenny have never played football until they get to the ninth grade. A lot of players do. Mark Thorson, I'll never forget when he told me this. He was a former coach and a very good coach at Kenny, now the AD. He said, I've got a bigger challenge because my guys have not learned to block and tackle, a lot of my guys, because we get kids from the Catholic school system where there's no youth league or middle school football.
Right.
Now, some of our kids have played Pop Warner, but not all. And he said, so I've got to win, but everybody I get's played baseball. He said, we've got to throw the football because I get guys who are coordinated, hand-eye coordination, which made a lot of sense. I worry that if you didn't play any tackle football at all until the ninth grade, kids wouldn't know how to tackle and could get hurt.
But I think you can teach them how to tackle without or still just not letting them tackle in an actual game. I think there's a methodology that can be taught there. It's just if people are so concerned, like he says, about CTE and they're not going to let their sons play football at all, then that's when you come up with a lot more issues.
And for me, I don't know enough about it. Pete Carroll says kill instant replay. No, Pete, I don't think I was going to go for that one.
Go ahead. I was going to say, I'll tell you a good one that I think is Eric Winston's suggestion, seed the playoffs by record, not division title.
Right.
They've got to get away. They'll never do it, but they've got to get away from that. It is awful.
Yeah.
When a 12-4 team has to go to a 8-8 team, but that 8-8 team won its division.
Yeah, good point. The 8-8 team should always, the division winner should always be in. You got to have some value to winning your division. But I hear you. If the team with a better record should always play host to the game. I don't disagree with that. Mark Leibovich, who is the chief national correspondent for the New York Times, Lauren, and you know me way too well. You knew this is the one that would get my attention.
Yeah, absolutely. You talked about the Pirates.
I've talked about it forever.
Bad owner for several
years. Yeah, it says the NFL. It says make ownership. Bad ownership should be up for a public vote. Now you got to be careful.
You do,
because people would want to just vote people out, just to vote people out.
Correct.
But
it's not Survivor.
Yeah, but at some point, and he says 5 years. I don't know if it's 5 years, but at some point, if it's clear a bad owner, like he's talking about Daniel Snyder. If it's clear Daniel Snyder is bad at it, the people of Washington should have some say. Now, I know in a capitalistic society that'll never happen. I get it. I understand capitalism, and I'm glad we have it. But there's some merit to the thinking that there should be somehow some way to give somebody else a crack at the Redskins because they got a hamburger owner, right?
Ideally, yes. But it's just one of those things that I don't know how you could ever make happen. And in this, you know, he puts forth 35% approval. I mean, I just think we do sort of live in an age where there aren't a lot of owners that are going to get that. I mean, I don't think there are.
Unless you just won the Super Bowl.
First off, if you like your team, are you really going to be motivated to go vote for your owner?
That's the problem.
I mean, it lends itself to...
The negative would always get more votes.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's why it's tricky. Maybe 35% and... a core number, maybe, you know, 20,000 people would have to also, you know, maybe that would help balance it out if you were really going to do it. But at the end of the day, it's just, it's the same thing as a group of people coming up to me and saying, we think you should sell your car because you don't take good care of your car. You haven't washed it. And it's like, well, it's my car. If I don't want to wash my car,
right.
I don't have to wash my car.
Right.
Well, no, you not washing your car makes your car ugly, and that bothers us.
Yeah.
So we demand that you sell that car.
Yeah.
And
without me, without us, you wouldn't have the car. You know, I mean, that I think that's why the people matter in this thing is it's more to it than that. You're right. You're involving a community.
You'd almost have to do some sort of a survey versus just a vote,
yeah.
you know, to really understand what people are unhappy about. Well, and it can't just be about winning and losing.
Yeah.
That the owner doesn't control necessarily the win-loss record.
But Lauren knows me too well. This hit home with me because of the baseball situation with my favorite team, the Pirates. 15 years ago, give or take, 12 years, 10 years ago, 12, whatever. No, I guess Nutty's only owned the team 13 years, so 8 years ago, 9 years ago. Mark Cuban, who's from Pittsburgh and is one of the richest people in the world, richest people in the country, and is a good owner, said, I would like to buy the Pittsburgh Pirates. I will buy them tomorrow at whatever the value is. I'll go above value. I'll go above market value. I'll go above whatever the valuation comes in at because I want to buy the Pittsburgh Pirates because I grew up there and I grew up as a Pirates fan and I want to make them good. Well, that was all the talk now. You know, this cheap ass would sell the team to Mark Cuban, who's anything but that. But Nutty said, sorry, I'm not selling it to you. Well, everybody in Pittsburgh is hurt by that. The whole city gets hurt by it. The economy would be better. The team economy, people would be excited. The self-esteem of the sports fans would be better. But all Bob Nutting's got to say is, sorry, I'm not selling it to you. That's a shame. Everybody wins if he would sell it,
but it's
except for the Nutting family.
Yeah, and it makes more sense to have it in baseball for that reason. Would you not – if Daniel Snyder owned the Pirates,
yeah.
would you have a problem with him? Because he spends.
Right.
So you'd be spending
– sure.
Way more than what you do now.
Yeah.
You may just not be spending on the yeah. right people.
Yeah, if Daniel Snyder owned the Pirates and spent a bunch of money and they lost, I would implore him to hire a better front office, but I wouldn't want him out. This guy, they're never going to win, and no one's going to. The A's had that great season last year. Now they're one of the worst teams in baseball. The Rays won 90 games last year, and they're off to a nice start this year. But they're never going to win consistently. The Royals won the World Series 5-6 years ago. Now they may be the worst team in baseball. Teams that don't spend will never be good for very long. Never. They're never going to be good for very long.
So shouldn't Major League Baseball put in some sort of rule? You have to spend X amount each year.
Well, there should be a floor. Yeah, we've talked about that 1,000 times, a cap and a floor. So, but anyway, we were talking about football. That one hit me because it's a baseball issue, as you knew it would. And I think it makes a lot of sense.
But it's also why Jacksonville should be very happy with their owner and all that Shad Khan is doing for the city and for the team.
Yeah, it's not a great football recommendation because the only reason to really get rid of the owner is if he's cheap and isn't trying to compete with the other owners. So Rich Eisen says give the ball back to the offense on fumbles through the end zone. Where do you stand on that one?
No, I don't think so. I think that's the price you pay. You know,
it doesn't bother me either.
Fumbling is supposed to be very penal. In football, I mean, fumbling the ball is one of the cardinal sins of the game. If you've got the ball, you've got to protect it. You've got to secure it. And if you put it on the ground, then bad things should happen. And if you're close to the goal line and the ball comes out and it rolls back out of bounds through the end zone, then to me that's a huge defensive victory. So absolutely, the defense should be off the field and the team that fumbled it lost the chance to score.
I went to a Jaguars women's football 101 one time, and the running backs coach, I don't know his name now, this was several years ago, but he had us do the drill of the running backs, and he said, okay, this is exactly how you hold the football, and he had a stick, and he would say, you know, as you go through like kind of the tires, he was like, all right, you know, we're going to try to get the ball out, and everybody who's not holding the football, I want you to heckle the chick with the ball if she drops it when that stick comes prodding. He's like, because that's what y'all do to us. And of course,
that's kind of funny.
I'm the first in line, and I'm like, I got this. And he gets the stick out, and all the ladies are like, you suck! And I was like, this is what the poor running backs have to go through. And I've never again yelled at somebody the way I used to about fumbling the football.
Final thing, we got to go to break here. But what would you do with overtime? Florio says adopt the XFL's rule where both – I still don't understand this. Offenses and defenses are both on the field. Is that what they're I still don't understand.
Yeah,
are they at opposite ends, and do the officials get split up? It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, I'm going to have to see that one before I know exactly
but,
what they're
but what would right now...
It's inspired by soccer and hockey using penalty kicks and shots to break ties.
Yeah, but I still don't see how these guys would do it. So let me ask you quickly.
Either.
Overtime.
Those are bad. I don't like the soccer and hockey overtimes.
Overtime. Would you give both teams the ball no matter
Absolutely.
What? Would you give both teams the ball no matter what?
No.
You wouldn't, would you? I'd give. That's the one change I would make is no matter what happens on the first possession, the second team gets a possession. Back in a moment. This is 1010XL and 92.5 FM. Hey, we're glad you're back. Lauren Brooks is here. Hayes Carlion is here. Andrew Gibson as well. Tomorrow at 5 o'clock, Matt Hayes will join us to talk a little college football. And, of course, Pete Prisco weighs in on NFL stuff. Is Pete off this? Pete's off this week, so no Pete this
Pete
week.
Pete is right? off, we'll yes. Pete, next, Pete is in Aruba.
He's there right now, don't you think? Enjoying that sun?
I would assume so. If it was me and I was going to go on vacation, I'd sure as heck go. Monday
the
through
whole
Friday
week,
is,
for crying
a,
out
is
out
the minimum.
If you're going to go all in, right?
I know two different sets of people in Mexico right now, so I'm watching on social media them go through their vacations.
What about the Hayden Hurst thing? How cool was that?
That was funny.
I loved it.
How about that? I mean, that's a movie, isn't it? So now the Baltimore paper wrote a story about it. Did you see this?
Oh, they did.
So for people that didn't see it, Hayden Hurst is in a plane. Apparently not first class, right? Because
one would think not, right?
Yeah, unless he's in the back of first class and she's in the first and she was gone.
He would have caught her.
Yeah, he could.
He had to have been in
and so,
coach.
So Hayden Hurst, people know Hayden from here in Jacksonville, from Bowles, now a tight end with the Ravens, tweets essentially, hey, gorgeous brunette. Hey, tall, gorgeous brunette on my plane to Baltimore. You're too fast. I couldn't catch you, but I hope you're on Twitter. And then he...
We put hashtag the one that got away.
The one that got away. That was fantastic. But then did you read all the comments?
No.
Bro, you're a first-round draft pick. What kind of 40 you run? You couldn't catch her? And then,
well, as everybody knows, getting off airplanes is not exactly a
quick
process.
His response was, relax, buddy. I was taking a picture with somebody. That was kind of his answer.
Oh, that's great.
What a cool story. I thought it was a cool story.
So I thought about it from the female angle. And what if I was on his flight, I saw who he was, and I tweeted at him. I was like, yes, I'm on Twitter. Here I am. Thanks for the compliment. And what if Hayden was like, sorry, I didn't mean you.
That's right. Yeah. Well, that's the chance you take, right?
You were a nice brunette, but you weren't the tall, gorgeous brunette I was referring
well,
to.
Well, you know what, though? But – if you're thinking, okay, I'm single girl looking, first round draft pick, you send it anyway. All he can tell you is, no, it's not you, right?
That would be terrible,
right?
Though.
Right? Who's gonna?
That would be awful.
Who's gonna know?
In the public.
I think if you're,
all of Twitter's gonna know.
I think if you're Hayden, I think you're taking that girl out.
Yeah, just, right, right.
You're, even if you're not overly,
right, right.
It's a pity date.
It might be a pity
date. But with Hayden Hurst.
Hey, you never know. Maybe you do.
I mean, I'm not single either way. But so I found it just funny from that perspective, and I also wondered if it was more just kind of funny. But it sounds like it was a real thing that happened to
him. Yeah, no, I don't think there's any question. It was real. And that, did you go to the comments, the responses?
No.
I went to see the comments. Oh, yeah, there are a lot of them. A lot of there's four or five girls said, hey, look, it wasn't me, but I'm on Twitter. So I thought it was awesome. So,
have you all ever done that? Like, tried to get a date with somebody that you didn't know through a weird method? I mean, I shouldn't say weird, but a different type of method?
Well this will surprise you. But the last time I was single, there wasn't a whole lot of activity on social media.
No, not through social media, but like a napkin, leaving a number.
No, I did one time meet a girl on a plane.
Okay.
And who was from Pittsburgh, of all things, but exchanged cards and talked a few times and said we were going to connect next time I was in town. It just never happened, but I didn't have to track her down. You mean to track down?
Though. Yeah, we were at breakfast one time, and there was a group of us, including Amanda Borges, mm-hmm. and we were going to go play some football with Amanda because she was going to play in the Flag Football League mm-hmm. with, I think, Marcel and some other people. Yeah. And so we were going to kind of, like, Caitlin and I and Brian and then Lonnie, we were all going to teach her, you know, how to run routes, stuff like that. So anyway, we go to breakfast, and... there's a single guy. I assume he's single. We all assume he's single because he's sitting by himself and he was just reading. And Amanda thought he was really cute. But Amanda didn't have the guts to go up to him and say anything.
Right.
So before we leave for the beach, we all go outside. She sends Lonnie, our friend, in. And she sends a guy in to go talk to the guy. And he's like, hey, so this friend of mine out there thinks you're really attractive. can I get your number? And they end up chit-chatting. And long story short, the guy came with us to the beach and they went on a couple dates. It didn't work out, but that's okay. Now Lonnie and this guy are still like best friends and Lonnie went to his wedding. So sometimes you never know. You may end up with the friend instead of the girl.
First time I went out with Suzanne.
I'm not sure we can turn that into like a Tom Hanks movie, but that's a pretty cool story.
But I'll tell you this story. True story. First time I met Suzanne, we'd been out once. I didn't call her a second time. My buddy Tom the Catcher, who you know.
Yep.
He said, what about the redhead? Are you going to call her? I said, yeah, I don't know. He said, I'll call her. We had a baseball game. We had a 30 and over baseball game that day. And we were playing at Sandalwood. And he said, I'll call her. So he calls her. He says, hey, this is Tom and Frank's friend. Why don't you come to the game? She goes, okay. So I'm like, he said, you're such a sissy. So anyway, so he did. So I'm catching. Even though Tom the Catcher called her, he was playing short. I was catching. So I'm catching this game at Sandalwood. And I see her walk up. And she's sitting there with some of the other wives. And 100% true story. I see her up there, but you got to look cool now. Whatever you do, looking cool is more important than anything else. Okay, you can't look excited. No matter what happens, you can't be excited guy. You got to be cool guy, right?
You can't turn around and wave.
You absolutely. I'm catching. I'm giving signals. It's not a softball game. It's a baseball game. Okay, I got the full gear. I'm not waving. Okay, under her nose. I can't even acknowledge that she's there, but I know she's there, and she's sitting on the third base side. Third base dugout, Sandalwood. Two outs in this inning. Guy pitching for us, Mark Steele throws a little slider. I go to block it, and I catch one right where the sun doesn't shine. Now, I've got a cup on, but it doesn't matter when you catch one, okay? Just trust me on this. When you catch one, all right, and I'm thinking, phew. And everybody in the park knows I've caught one. This girl I'm trying to go out with is sitting one row in. What do you do? You can't. I don't want to bend over. I've worked too hard to look cool. Okay, you can't look cool till you bend over. So I'm like, boy, I caught one. And every baseball player knows what just happened. Okay, cup or no cup, you just caught one. You're trying to block a pitch and you caught one. I walk out there, and I walk out there to steal, and I'm just grimacing here. And I walk out to the mound, and I hand him the ball. He goes, "Catch you in the." I said, "It did." He goes, "That redhead, the girl who came to see us?" I said, "It is." He goes, "You're going to bend over?" I said, "No, I'm not." Okay. Walk back and finish up, and then talk to her in between innings. 100% true story.
Well, let's back up just a quick minute. You went out with her one time, but you didn't call her a second time?
I called her a second time, but maybe not the third. I don't know. For some reason, I wouldn't call her into that. We'd been out a few times. But I wasn't calling her that day, so Tom called her. And
oh, okay.
She went out with all of us afterwards. But
he wasn't calling her to date her. He was calling her.
No, he was calling her. He was calling her because I was too much of a sissy to call that time. That's 100%. But really, two outs in the inning, ball, and I'm trying to block. And by the way, there's nobody on. Why some dumbass in a 30 and over league catching is trying to block the pitch? Let it go to the backstop. There's nobody on base. You know what I'm. But I think I'm again. Hey, you're trying to be cool, okay? Cool guy. Trying to be cool can change everything.
Did you talk to her about it after? Like, did she witness all of it and understand?
At the time, no. Since then, we've laughed about it 1,000 times. You know, but at the time, but that's 100% true story. All right, you got to tell me. We're back to sports in a second. By the way, the Gator baseball team going to make the tournament now?
I don't think they're in unless they beat A&M.
They're 13-17 in the league. Everybody figured 13 was the minimum number they could get to. By sweeping Missouri, they've gotten to the 13 now. So the question now becomes, I'm like you, beat A&M. See, right now it's the first round of the SEC tournament is single elimination. Florida hasn't been in that single elimination round in years, probably 10 years since they've been in that thing. Now they got to win the first game to get to the double elimination. So if you win one game, then you got a couple chances to win another game, you're probably in. I still say what I said before. You don't want to see them. Even though they've had a bad year, you don't want to be Louisville hosting and Florida's the 2 or 3 seed in your 4-team region. That's what you don't want. Because at any moment, they can get hot.
And so, they'll be inspired.
And right. And they pitch really well in Missouri, so we'll talk about that coming up. But will you coach? Am I coachable? I'm coachable, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, I'm a coachable person. Will you coach me on Game of Thrones? Because I've never watched. Do you watch it, Lauren?
No.
Gibster, do you watch Game of Thrones?
Never seen it.
Okay, so three of us have never seen it. The three guys on the noontime show never watched it. So, I mean, but Matt, Leon wasn't there today when I did the handoff, but Joe Hacker and Matt never watched it. So the three of us never watched it. You do watch it.
I do.
So before you tell me whether or not you kind of liked the ending.
I liked I loved it.
Because people hated the ending.
Yeah.
But people on Twitter hate everything. So, but Tell me, and again, for people, and because I'm the only person in the world that doesn't know this, indulge me as you're driving down the road, so do it fast.
Sure.
Give me no whole, spoilers.
Well, it's over.
Yeah, but you still people can watch haven't it seen it yet.
I'll just say this.
Well, but first of all, before you tell me about the ending, give me the setup of Game of Thrones. What is Game of Thrones? For people that don't know.
It's basically seven different kingdoms, and you can rule. There can be one ruler for these seven kingdoms. So there's different houses, different families that are all vying to have the Iron Throne and rule all of Westeros.
Okay.
And so the whole show is built around the power struggle to rule the world, basically. Okay. So that's it. And, I love the finale.
And by the way, let me just say this. If you have it on tape or if you've recorded it, turn the radio off, okay? Because I'm not worried about spoiler alert if it's over, all right? It's over.
Well, a lot of people probably haven't seen it yet because you know how the world works is you put it on
TV. I will say,
then turn it off. Turn off the radio.
That works.
If you really like the show, I don't know how you couldn't have watched last night.
Okay.
I mean, it's the last one. You know what I mean? So
yeah, I just know there are people that are behind.
And I certainly won't try to spoil anything.
Well, you can spoil. But you've been forewarned now to turn off the radio.
Okay.
Having said that, all I know is some dude named Jon Snow didn't get the throne, and everybody's ticked off about it.
Yeah. And
am I saying that right?
Yeah, absolutely. And, it was sort of it was a little surprising who did get the Iron Throne. Or actually, there was no Iron Throne. One of her dragons destroyed it. The last dragon destroyed it after she was killed. I think they all got good endings, and it sort of Jon Snow is from the Stark house, and the Starks are the ones that you really get the most invested in terms of the family. And the reason that the show became such a phenomenon is the show had one star, Ed Stark, and in the first season, in the ninth episode, they decapitated him, and he was like the heart of the show,
right?
And they killed him in the ninth episode, and it was like what? And then in season three, his wife and oldest son and son's wife, who's pregnant, are all killed. So it's this show that, it would off, beloved characters, mm-hmm. unlike anything I've ever seen. And
did The Sopranos ever do that?
I didn't watch it.
Okay.
It was I liked the finale because the Starks that were remaining – I thought all got put in good places. Jon Snow went. He was technically sentenced to go to Castle Black, but he ended up going north and being with the Wildings, and that's what I think suits him best. I won't go all the way through it, but I really liked it.
You thought they got it right.
Yeah, I thought they got it right, but I'm just looking to be entertained.
But people Twitter killed it.
Yeah, I'm not looking for Game of Thrones to change the way I look at the world. You know, it doesn't have to alter my essence as a person. You know, I'm just looking for an hour and a half of escapism and to be entertained, and that's what it did. So
that's interesting because Sex and the City for me, I was looking for it to alter my essence.
How'd it work out?
But you're right, Hayes. People put, it seems like, so much into either shows or movies that they almost leave physically drained after, and then they get upset if it's not the way they wanted it. And it's like, you know that you had no process in the creation.
But everybody on Twitter was upset. I say everybody. Many people on Twitter were upset about the way it ended. But again, I will say this. With social media, the angry guy is going to speak up more than the guy that liked it.
Absolutely.
That's just natural. So where did it rank with Sopranos or 6 Feet Under, or Homeland, or all these shows on movie networks? Is it the most popular one?
Probably
is it first.
I don't think it'll be first, but I think it'll be beloved. I think it'll.
Is it bigger than Sopranos?
I would say no.
It's hard to judge though because there wasn't social media then.
Yeah. What about Homeland? Wasn't Homeland?
I would say it's bigger than Homeland.
Okay.
I would say
it's not as big as Breaking Bad.
Breaking Bad would probably be gigantic big, right?
Yeah. But I do think it's a tough show to create. Think about it. You're making this, it's an entirely a fantasy show. with dragons and all sorts of different creatures. And it's much harder to do Game of Thrones than it would be to do The Sopranos.
Because this Sopranos is kind of real life, yeah, just mobbed
just
up.
Mafia.
Right. Yeah. So I think Game of Thrones will be remembered well, even by people that didn't really like the final season, because it's just so different and massive in scope that you have to appreciate, I think, all the intricacies of it.
And it started from books, right?
It did.
Yeah.
And the show ended up passing the books around like season 3 or 4, I want to say.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
So at some point, HBO sort of took over without knowing what George R.R. Martin was going to do. Now, he's still alive. He's still writing. And his books may end up closing it in a much different way.
Wouldn't that be interesting?
Yeah. And there were things that in the books that that never became part of the TV show. Like in the TV show I mentioned, the mother gets killed at the wedding. Well, in the book, she becomes this like afterlife figure who still has a role. Well, they didn't do that in the TV show. When she dies, she just, that's it, and she's done.
Interesting, because most of the time the books are very close to the movies in things like this, like Harry Potter or Lord of the Rings.
Right.
Right?
Yeah, so I think that is... that was an interesting part of it. But anyway, I don't get it. I mean, it's just a TV show. It's for entertainment. And I didn't really understand the backlash that people had. I mean, it's fine not to like it, but I found myself wondering, you know, like, what exactly are you trying to get out of this?
Right. Now, I'll say that, having said all that, I'll say this. I've watched plenty of TV shows where I'm mad at it. I'm mad at the show because they killed this person off or did that. You've done that, right? There's plenty of TV shows.
I remember being upset with the finale of Seinfeld, thinking that was one of the lamest things I've ever seen. Even though now, as a much older, not necessarily wiser, but much more cynical, or at least the world has made me become a little bit more cynical, I look back and I think, okay, now I kind of get where they were coming from, putting them in jail to end Seinfeld. Yeah. Like, they all probably deserved that karma-wise based off of the lives that they led and some of the things that they laughed at.
For me, I'm not even talking about how series ended. I just could tell you, watching a show, I'm mad they killed off this guy or they killed that guy or this person got off or this person got convicted. I mean, we watch all those crime shows, Criminal Minds and Law and Order and SVU. That's the Frangie family go-to. So, and this guy Dick Wolf is sick. Okay, I don't want to meet him. Okay, because he has gory bad things happen to people, you know. So I mean, and all he's got all these shows, you know. So and I'm kidding, they're great shows. So but anyway, all right. So that's that. So you told me Game of Thrones. I will say this, and you're right, Lauren. Maybe because social media, not only is around, but it's never been more alive and poignant and such a big part of our society as it is now. But I was overwhelmed by the Game of Thrones following. I'm trying to remember anything in pop culture similar, movies, TV shows that got this. Star Wars didn't get this attention at least on my timeline. It didn't get that attention.
Well, and again, it's interesting in the sense that Star Wars is, you know, there's just so much material of it. With Game of Thrones, it was interesting because this was it. It was a fairly I had never even heard, I know I had friends that had read the books when HBO announced that they were doing it.
Right.
But the first time that I saw the preview for it, I had never heard of the books, Song of Ice and Fire. And so I think that's what's really interesting is it's a pop culture phenomenon that really kind of came out of nowhere, which in this age of reboots and, you know, everything is coming off of something, whether it's like a comic book from, you know, that was started decades ago or whatever. There just doesn't seem to be a lot of original ideas that grab such a large part of the public. And Game of Thrones did it. I would recommend it if somebody wants to start it. And like I said, I like the finale. It was tough. One of the more beloved characters throughout the series, who's always been good, she makes a decision. She loses some advisors close to her. And she makes a decision in the second to last episode that totally changes her character. And, you know, maybe there were people that didn't like that. But, you know, I mean, I think they did a good job of explaining why she reached the conclusion she reached.
The 6 o'clock hour is next. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more. We'll reset the golf yesterday. What a performance by Brooks Koepka. A little bit of baseball talk coming up. And I got a thought or two about Zion in the NBA. It's all coming up in the 6 o'clock hour on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Out of Florida State, Brooks Koepka won the PGA Championship wire to wire. Welcome back to the Frangie Show. Frank Frangie, Hayes Carline, Andrew Gibson, and Lauren Brooks with you until 7 o'clock tonight. We're going to get to a little more PGA Championship talk. But first, this Friday is the third annual First Pitch. That's right. It is already upon us. Memorial Day weekend is almost here. If you would like to be a part of this year's First Pitch at the Baseball Grounds of Jacksonville, doors open at 5:30. You can bring three other people if you are caller number two right now, 641-1010, and you will get to go to the First Pitch. Of course, we have lots of local restaurants that you can sample from: Boston's, Bono's, Mudville Grill, Metro Diner, Carrabba's and Jack's Beach, Black Sheep, Best Bet with Sushi, Moe's, Bearded Pig, High Tide Burrito, Copeland's, and Bluebell Ice Cream to top it all off. They are bringing fudge bars, moo bars, crunch bars, ice cream sandwiches, and assorted pops.
Crunch bars? Are you kidding me?
Oh, all that of changes that everything. Ice cream. Going to be delicious. So caller number two right now, 641-1010. You will win a family four-pack of tickets. If you don't win them, of course, you'll have chances throughout the week. But also, you can buy them. Just $10 for adults. WalkoffCharities.com. Kids, get in free. And Frank, you want to invite the Little League teams as well.
We've got a lot of youth league teams coming. All you have to do is, and it's free, it's on us. Coaches and teammates can all come. Just wear your jerseys, your uniform jerseys. I want you to call. Go on walkoffcharities.com. The phone number's on the site. Just call the phone. Do you have the phone number? The phone number's on the site.
I can get it very quickly.
And then just call the number and say, hey, I want to bring my Little League team. Frank said I can bring them for free. They will eat all night long. They will drink all night long. It's water, by the way.
904-304-2067. 904-304-2067. And it sounds like Gibby is on the phone with a winner. So, unfortunately, everybody else, you'll have to wait until tomorrow. Or, again, good job, Josh. Congratulations. Or go to walkoffcharities.com. By the way, just a quick bit of news before we get back to the PGA Championship. Redskins linebacker Reuben Foster did indeed tear his ACL. It was a season-ending injury. They were worried earlier when he had the injury in the OTAs, but it is a season-ending injury.
That's the danger when you're on the field. And before you blame the organized activity, you could do that jogging. Certainly, you won't be a very good football player if you're not staying in shape in some capacity, whether you're with your team or not. So that stuff happens. One more time, 304-2067. If you want to bring a youth league team, we got a lot of them coming. Hang out with other youth leaguers. It's a celebration of baseball. We'd love to have you come by and hang out with us. Just call the phone number or go on walkoffcharities.com. Bring your team. We're going to have a big time. Hang out with us. What a fun night Friday night's going to be. We've more and more folks. Keelan Cole will be there. Artis Gilmore will be there. Sam Saunders from the PGA Tour, a tour player will be there. Certainly Hicken and me and a bunch of us from the media. Brent Martineau will be there. Chris Porter will be there from First Coast News. It's going to be a lot of fun, folks, having a big time trying to hit home runs. So come out and hang out with us. We'd love to have you do this. It's going to be an awfully fun night. Comes up on Friday night at 5 o'clock. We heard Bruce Koepka.
Hey, real quick on that. I think I love when you guys give away the four-pack. So this one is on me. I'd like to give away a four-pack for a family.
Well, I appreciate it. Well, thank you for that, Hayes. That was very nice. Hayes, you know what? Then we'll give away another one. How about that?
Way to go, Hayes.
All right. You know what? Fire that number back up. 641.
Caller number three this time.
Up to Hayes. What number? Caller three? 10-10.
Three sounds great to me.
All right.
Hayes, thank you for that.
Sure thing.
Hey, while we were talking, Hayes just bought you entrance into the event.
That is so sweet.
That was very nice, Hayes. Thanks for doing that, brother.
We really do have such a fun time. The Celebrity Home Run Derby, as Frank was just talking about, will go on the field. Hayes and I will be doing the show right there on the main concourse. Hopefully we're going to get some of those media, quote-unquote, celebrities to join us and talk trash to one another. And certainly it is all you can eat, and it's a blast. It'll be a beautiful night, and it's Memorial Day weekend. What else you got going on?
Let me tell you this, Brooks. You told me, you said earlier.
And the phones are all lit up once again.
Thank you, Ace, for doing that. And I'm holding the check right now, by the way. He didn't just make it up. I'm holding it in my hand. let me just say this. You talked about am I reluctant to get any of the media guys or celebrities that may hit more home runs than me?
Yes.
If I was too reluctant, we wouldn't have a whole lot of players, okay? Okay. But good luck talking more smack than me. Let me just say that part, okay? Bring it, okay? Bring it, Keelan Cole.
I was going to say, bring Keelan Cole goes train. Up against Jalen Ramsey okay, in yeah. practice.
That's okay.
He's probably
That's
been okay. around a veteran but trash
he
talker.
He hadn't gone up against me trash talking yet, okay, Keelan Cole? So you're right, though. If you go head-to-head with Jalen Ramsey, he's probably heard some trash talk. So
he's probably heard a lot of it. It's going to be an absolute blast. I cannot wait.
Let's reset it from the beginning of the show, Hayes. Brooks Koepka wins the PGA, his fourth major. Only 34 people to ever win four majors before 30. Tiger Woods is the only player to ever win more than four before 30. He won 10. I've got to believe this run Brooks Koepka is on, other than Tigers, of course, it doesn't trump that, and it doesn't trump Nicklaus's, but I'm talking about this wave of great players we've seen in this most recent generation of Dustin Johnson and Jordan Spieth's run and Rory McIlroy. This one's got to trump them all, does it not?
I think it does, and I go back to early last week when Brooks had his pre-tournament press conference, and to hear him go through and dissect the field in terms of why he thought that anytime he goes to a major, he can win, and to say, what's the field at? 155, okay, well, 80 of those guys, I'm just better than. And then of the remaining, 40 of the remaining guys just aren't going to have it this week. So I don't have to worry about them. And then there's going to be like 30 guys left, and half of those guys are going to wilt in the moment. So then I really just have to beat the guys that are left. For him to say that and have such a confidence on Tuesday or Wednesday, whenever he had his press conference, and then to go out there and just absolutely demolish Bethpage Black, demolish Tiger Woods in the first two rounds being paired with him, and then to really put it on cruise control until the back nine, where he had to find himself again but was able to. And Dustin Johnson, I feel bad for him in saying it, but it seems like he got close, realized he got close, and the next thing he knew, he bogeyed. That just seems to be a theme with Dustin Johnson, is he is always in the top five but is really having trouble closing these events. Brooks Koepka is having anything but trouble closing these events. It's amazing that he went from his first major to his fourth major in a span of 700 days. That is a record in golf by a mile. The previous record was about 1,100 days. Going from first major to fourth major championship. And I just keep coming back to, where does this go? Does Brooks Koepka go on a run where he becomes a 10-time major champion? There's only three players that have done that, Tiger, Nicklaus, and Hagen. Or is this the, you know, catching lightning in a bottle to the millionth degree, and Brooks Koepka will settle back in a little bit and be what I think most people believed he would be his first few years on tour, which is good player, but not necessarily great player, and certainly not generational player. It is amazing for somebody that had some, you know, had the length on the tour that he had without really making any sort of major statement, to now be a four-time major champion. Basically in less than 2 years' time.
Well, and it's all about focus, because if you saw Brooks Koepka walking out for his final round yesterday, his girlfriend Jenna Sims wanted to give him a good luck kiss. He was not having that.
He wasn't making that one.
And at first I thought she might be upset, but she certainly wasn't. She understands. That's how he is, and he's in the zone.
But she did give it the, no, I wasn't kissing him. What? No, I wasn't.
Yeah.
She did try to give it the, no, what? You, what? No, why wouldn't me? No, I wouldn't.
Yeah, I didn't believe that necessarily. But I understand, you know, when you are locked in, and I'm not going to compare this really to how I am at the gym, but I understand, at least from my perspective, when I'm in the middle of a really good workout, the last thing I want you to do is chit-chat or try and take me kind of out of the zone. And Brooks Koepka certainly had a reason to be focused. Hey, he knew that there was a lot of pressure.
Wait a minute. So if you're at the gym, you're working against the arch nemesis, you're grinding, you're battling, you're fighting, you're clawing, you're scratching, you're trying to win a championship that day, and Brian came in and wanted to give you a good luck kiss, you wouldn't give him one?
Absolutely not.
Unbelievable. Does he know this? Does he know this is your position?
I'm sure he does. And
what do you make of that, Caroline?
He respects competition enough, he wouldn't even try to do that.
She's locked in. I was curious. You asked us the question if we'd ever done anything sort of unorthodox, kind of in the Hayden Hurst vein. Has a guy ever done anything, like, do you have a story about a guy doing something sort of a little thinking outside the box to try and get your attention or ask you out?
Oh, that's a good question. I don't think so. I'm racking my brain for the Nothing several jumps hundreds out. Of men that yeah. have tried to ask me out in my lifetime. Oh, wait, it's probably way less than that. Nothing jumps out, but I'll think about it during the break and see if I can come up with anything. I know my dad, when he approached my mom when they were in college, they were in the astronomy class, and he offered to carry her books, and he said, I think it's fate because we're taking a class about under the stars. And
Mike Smooth is so what that is remarkably
cool. That's how he got her attention.
You know what? Done. Done. Ball game.
You have 27 siblings, is that right?
But yeah, I'll have to think about it. I don't nothing comes to mind. But I'm just glad Brooks Koepka didn't choke it away and give it to DJ. I thought the crowd was ridiculous yesterday, chanting DJ right after Koepka makes a putt. I don't think that's how golf fans should act. But I understand in the heat of the moment, you know, they're going crazy. And did you see that scene? I forget exactly which hole it was. It was like 15 or 16 when Koepka was in a bad place and then he hits the shot and the crowd's like running with him and the security guards are pushing people right. back. People can't get behind a golfer like that at the Players. So I didn't understand why they were allowing people, random fans, to be that close to him.
Well, golf courses are all different. It's not – football field is the same dimensions, basketball right. court. Golf courses are different, so you never know when people – they're harder to secure. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll talk a little boxing, believe it or not, that and more. This is 1010XL and 92.5 FM. Have you watched the Deontay Wilder fight?
You know, I haven't, but I was mesmerized at his knockout the other night. I watched it on Twitter like 100 times.
Yeah,
which took about 100 seconds.
Well, that's right. Do you care about boxing at all, Lauren?
Me, no. But obviously seeing his comment from last week, if my opponent dies, he dies, grabbed my attention.
And he shouldn't have said that because he's supposed to be a pretty good guy. He's certainly not a bad guy. And he's probably trying to juice up the sport, which is fallen so far behind MMA or UFC, whatever. For the first time, I saw him everywhere, Sports Center everywhere. He was just on PTI. He did this. It was all over Twitter. I've always believed, or the longest time believed, if boxing's ever going to have a real resurgence with the P2s, as it were, in other words, with the people that are not diehards, something spectacular has to happen at the heavyweight level. I don't care how great Manny Pacquiao was or Floyd Mayweather was. And Floyd Mayweather was a truly, truly great fighter. Boxing continued to fade. And you can be a boxing diehard and not agree. I don't care. The mainstream doesn't care about it. UFC is raced by it. But I wonder now, and we've all known about this Wilder guy. Rick Ballew used to talk about him all the time when we did a show together. But I made this comment. We were at the Super Bowl, was it Phoenix? I think we were at Super Bowl in Phoenix. And Deontay Wilder was going along Radio Row. And then Jason Dixon, our old PD here, Rick Ballew and I went to the Hooters, which was kind of like next to the all downtown, kind of in downtown where all the stuff was.
Eat local.
Yeah. And Wilder walks in there. Nobody notices him. He came over. We went in today. I saw you at Radio Row. Hey, thanks, man. Sat with he and one other guy, a handler or so. Nobody came up to him. Nothing. He was at Radio Row. Nobody recognized. Now, this was a lot of years ago, but nobody recognized him. Nobody said much to him.
That would have been 2015.
Is that what? Okay, so what that long? 4 years ago. So it wasn't that long ago. 4 years ago, the next day, Evander Holyfield showed up. You couldn't get close to him. You couldn't get waves and waves within him, much less bump into him at the Hooters and go up and sit down and talk to him for 5 minutes, because that was yesteryear. I wonder now, finally, if Wilder can kind of bring boxing back just a bit. I get this sense, maybe long because of the comment last week, maybe because of the one-punch knockout, maybe because he keeps knocking people out. Maybe, just maybe, this is the guy that might can do that.
Yeah, I think so, and he's 33, so I don't know.
So he's not a kid.
Yeah, how much longer he can do it. But it was incredibly impressive, seeing his knockout this weekend. I mean, he's 6'7", He's from Tuscaloosa. He's 41-0 with a draw, 40 by KO. It's sad in a sense that it took this long for people to sort of wake up to him, and I include myself in that. I mean, I would be much more willing to plan a night around watching him fight than I ever would have been. I mean, never would have even – it wasn't even on my radar that he was fighting until I saw the knockout on Twitter. I think it's one of those things where you need a group. You know, it's hard when it's just one guy. You need a really strong group that sort of rise together and really can create rivalry. And I don't know that that exists now. You know, we'll see if you know where it goes from here. But it feels like this is his career will be sort of the example of how boxing has faded. That this is a heavyweight, an American heavyweight. I mean, again, what a ring. He's 6'7". Obviously physically imposing, and to go, you know, 41-0 and really not get noticed, at least by casual sports fans, until a knockout when he's already 33. You hope that boxing will find a better place post Deontay Wilder. I think he can certainly contribute to it, but it just doesn't feel like you've got to have that fight you can't wait to see. And, you know, I don't know that that exists for him. I mean, maybe it does with Fury, but I don't know how much hype that's going
to
get.
But the Tyson Fury fight might be the one. Again, Deontay Wilder's not 23, he's 33. So he doesn't have that much time left. I just think he's the most talked about heavyweight fighter in many years.
No, he is, but here's the sad part to y'all. I don't care if boxing goes away. I don't want to ever watch a fight. I think it's a barbaric sport. I've never been into – I watched UFC for a little while and then realized I also couldn't really stand that, the gore of it. I don't enjoy it. And so I understand that at one point boxing was this huge American sport, and I don't want to knock something that I was never a part of or a fan of. But it's fine to me if we never hear really about the sport again.
Yeah, and I'm not somebody that's so married to the history of, oh, my God, I wish we had Ollie Frazier again. My dad was a gigantic boxing fan. He wanted to teach me how to box. He wanted to follow boxing. It was a big deal to him. So it was a bigger deal to me then than it is now. I like the sport. It's fun. I told you that that title boxing class was fun just because it was fun to do.
And because nobody was hitting you back.
And right. I like boxing. If I'm boxing, I like it with the other. I like the bag because the bag doesn't hit back.
Right.
Love the heavy bag. The heavy bag is defenseless. No, seriously. But boxing's not going to get you anyway. I'm talking about boxing trying to find the people that really love MMA.
Sure.
Okay, so for you, you're a non-factor either way. But the people that have gone, I won't even say gone from boxing to MMA because this generation never had boxing. But the people that are watching MMA, boxing would love to have them back. I'm not all that passionate about it either way. I'm not a guy that wishes boxing would come back. I don't care. But I'm just saying, it's this intriguing storyline because I grew up watching boxing.
Sure. I get the sense that UFC is fading and MMA is fading. Am I alone in that?
Yeah, I don't think that. I thought when it lost Ronda Rousey because she was such a big star. But I get the sense, and again, I'm not a big fan either, Lawrence. Are you a fan of it? I'm a very moderate fan at best.
Yeah, I'm not. I would much rather, if it was up to me, I would much rather see boxing come back and get back to its heyday than I would to see MMA.
I will say the Olympic boxing back in the day was really cool. Well, now that was way before you would have been watching sports, Lauren, but at least for me, back in the day, it was. I thought it was the coolest thing going. So,
Gibby, you're the youngest. Do you ever watch either boxing or UFC?
I don't, but I know that it certainly has its audience. You know, Frank, you were talking about just how your timeline blows up. Well, my timeline blows up when there's a UFC or the Wilder match. I mean, there's certainly an audience. I'm not part of it, though.
Yeah, I mean, Big Country loved it.
Sure.
I know people y'all's age that really loved it. So we'll see what happens with Deontay Wilder. Other things going on. Have you seen video of Arch Manning?
I haven't, but I saw it. I think that's so awesome. So this is Cooper's son.
It's Cooper's son, but if you watch video of him,
yeah, is he good?
He's very good.
He's in the ninth. Have you seen it, Lauren?
Yeah.
He's in the ninth grade.
That's so awesome.
He's already 6'1".
Start tanking now, Jaguars.
Dude, he's in the ninth grade, and he's got a hose, okay? And he really looks the part. I mean, now he's 6'1". People say, well, he's already 6'1 in the ninth grade. Well, that doesn't mean he's going to be 6'5 like his uncles. He might wind up being 6'1". Well, I don't know. Cooper's probably what, 6'2", 6'3"?
He's pretty big. How tall was Archie?
6'4", I think.
Yeah, I bet you he'll be 6'3", 6'4".
But he looks the part now, and he really.
That would be so exciting.
Well, I mean, but
there was
but
another
I'm just telling
Manning
you,
coming along.
I'm just telling you, watch him, man. The dude looks the part. So
I also read Cooper is 6'4". I shouldn't say was.
Okay.
I also read a really interesting story about why Archie Manning is so beloved the way that he is, and you know why years and years, obviously later, and it's because of his personality and the charm that he carries himself with. And he's never obviously really strayed from the public eye because of his sons. But still, people in Mississippi, you know, think that he is just the greatest thing.
He said something that has resonated with me more than one of the simplest things that I've ever heard. And I've never forgotten it. I don't know. The two things that resonated with me that somebody that I followed said. One, I told you, Steve Blass said this. I know everybody in the world has said it since, but the first guy I heard it say it was Steve Blass, who's in his 60th year as a Pirate with the Pittsburgh Pirates and his 50th as a broadcaster, 40th as a broadcaster, whatever. He said, if you find a job you love, you'll never work a day in your life. I've never forgotten that, you know, and I found one, you know. But the other thing, Archie Manning always said, he said this, his dad said this to him in that Manning, the book of Manning.
Mm-hmm.
And then he repeated it again. They said, how do you want to be remembered? And he said, I just want people to say he was a good guy. I have never forgotten that. Not that he was an MVP, not that he was Peyton and Eli's dad, not that he did this and did that and made all this money and was a great NFL quarterback and did this on TV and then this. And because I thought what he might say is a great dad. Peyton and Eli, he said, I just want people to think he was a good guy. I have never, just the way he said it with that southern drawl,
mm-hmm.
you know, guy kind of stretched mm-hmm. out a little bit. I have never forgotten that about Archie Manning.
If your goal is to just be, and I don't say just lightly, but just be a great dad, you're only affecting your kids and certainly who they reach out to as well or who they interact with. But if you really want to be a great guy, then you have to be like that around every single person you encounter, and especially if you're famous, right?
Yeah.
I liked the point of the story was not that he was this great victorious quarterback. It was more that the way that he interacts with people and something was written great about him and he picked up the phone and he called the author, some guy named Rick Cleveland, and he picked up the phone and he called the author and he said, I just wanted to thank you for what you wrote today. My mom read it and loved it and all this stuff. And so it's like, wow, he actually took the time to call the sports writer and thank him.
Rick Cleveland's a legendary columnist in the Mississippi area. You know who Rick Cleveland is?
Yeah.
Legendary Jackson.
I said some guy named Rick Cleveland.
Yeah. But he's
sorry, Rick.
Yeah.
One of my favorite Archie Manning, it's silly, but I love it. Do you remember that ESPN This Is Sports Center commercial where the Manning family is getting the tour of the building, and Eli and Peyton are sort of trailing behind Olivia and Archie.
They're screwing around.
And they're kind of messing with each other. Yeah. And Archie darts, gives them that look.
That was hilarious.
And they immediately kind of rise up. And I mean, it is the funniest thing. Yeah,
right, like behave.
Yeah. Right.
It's hilarious.
He still has that for sure. We all have that look.
I love it. My favorite, you can't tell this story anymore now because it's not politically incorrect, but it's socially so incorrect. Because you can't spit on people now, nor should you have ever spit on people. But he tells the greatest story I've ever heard about football is Butkus was this nasty, mean, toughest middle linebacker of all. They say you think Ray Lewis was nasty? Nobody was nastier than Butkus. And he said he was this, you know, everyone knows Archie Manning was this great college player, played at Ole Miss, almost won the Heisman, played here in the Gator Bowl with one broken hand against Pat Sullivan. Great, 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 great college player. Never played on a good NFL team, but was a great player. He got in the league. Was he the first overall pick, or he's a high pick, right?
High pick.
He was very
maybe
high
third.
Pick.
Third.
So he's this high pick of the Saints in early 70s or whenever it is. And he tells this great story. He says, first game I ever played against the Bears. You know, he said, I'd never played in the NFL before. I don't know if it was a preseason game or whatever. Playing against the Bears. Anyway, he says, first play, he gets flushed out. He's a really good runner and passer. Gets flushed out. Bud just came like a freight train. They said, how did you, what was it like early in the NFL? How'd you learn to play in the NFL? He said, flushed out of the pocket. Butkus picked him up, body slammed him on his back, head snapped back, fell on top of him to where Butkus's head hit his, picked him up then by the face. He had a single bar face mask. Remember the single bar? Picked him up by the single bar face mask, spit right in his face, pushed his head back down and says, "Welcome to the NFL, kid." And Manning told, and to hear Archie Manning tell that story, he said, "I wiped the spit on my face." Said, "Okay, that's what the NFL is like." It's okay. You got to hear him tell it. Spit right in my face, pushed me back. Said, "Welcome to the NFL, kid." He goes, "Wow, that was my welcome to the NFL."
That's
Dick
a
Butkus.
Good one.
All I
it's
know
a
is
great story.
If your name is Arch Manning,
yeah, right,
you have a lot to live up.
You
to.
Better believe it. You know what? Don't ever throw an incompletion. 1 second to go. We'll have it for you after this. It's 1010 XL and 92.5 FM. So after 279 episodes, Big Bang Theory's done. You ever watch it?
I did. I never got – I haven't seen it for a while, but I followed it in syndication.
Yeah.
And I've seen most of them probably up until the point where, like, Leonard and Penny got married.
Okay, which
so
is a couple years ago.
So three or four
ago.
Seasons
yeah,
I've
yeah,
probably
right. –
yeah. So I didn't watch the finale, but I did. I always liked the show.
Gibby, do you ever watch Big Bang Theory?
I never really got into it, but I did watch it.
How about you? Did you watch it?
Oh yeah, for a stretch I watched it every week, but it's probably been longer than even the 3 years. I didn't know they got married, so
yeah.
I knew they were dating, obviously, but
yeah.
I didn't know they got married.
Probably with you, I probably didn't watch it as much after that, but I really liked it. I thought it was funny. I thought Jim Parsons is hilarious.
He's incredible.
I mean, really, really funny.
But much like watching Jeopardy, I always felt dumber while watching Big Bang Theory because they would discuss things I had no idea about.
I thought it was the coolest thing ever that they made this incredible hit show about these science nerds. That was really, really cool.
But they added so many elements to it. You know, the quirky eccentricities made it, you know.
Correct.
The one guy, I forget his name now, but he didn't speak to women.
Raj
for years wouldn't speak to women, and then I think that changed, right?
Yeah.
Well, he could speak to them if he was
drinking.
That's right. If he was drinking, right? Like,
right.
That's not something you even expect for scientists.
Yeah, and he's the only one at the end that never found a somebody.
Oh,
Howard
that's
found
sad.
Bernadette. And
Bernadette's voice, which I know it's not her voice in real life, I thought was the most annoying voice of all time.
But it was hilarious because of that. And then Howard found Bernadette, and then Sheldon eventually got together with Blossom. What's her
name? Yeah, Amy Farrah Fowler.
Yeah, Amy Farrah Fowler. But Raj never did. But I really liked it. I thought it was hilarious. I thought she was, and I thought Kaley Cuoco was, apart from being good looking, I thought she was hilarious in that show. I thought she was really fun. She played the part really well. So their last show was last Monday.
Did you watch it?
I think I did. I watched the end of it. I know I watched the end of it. I'm trying to think if I saw it from the beginning. I might not have seen the beginning of it, but it was like an hour long. But I saw how they ended. They ended it with he had won the Nobel Prize for Science.
Which one? Sheldon?
Sheldon. Okay. And it was typical Sheldon. It was
like any of the others.
Well, like Leonard possibly could.
No, I'm just that's what
Sheldon
would say.
Right. Yeah. Well, and it was interesting how they ended the show. They're on a plane flying to Vegas or wherever to get this award, Nobel. He and Amy won it together. And in typical Sheldon, he doesn't care about anybody else. And who cares? And they found out that Penny's pregnant. And instead of that, Sheldon goes, don't mess this up. So finally at the end, he looks at Amy and says, looks like they're all leaving. Well, that's because you've offended them. It's always been about you. Your whole life has been about you. And Leonard goes, he doesn't mean to be that way. That's why she goes, I don't mean to be like that. And she goes, well, that's the only reason they put up with you, because they know you don't mean it, but they've had it. So he walks up there to get his award. And then Sheldon goes, it's kind of funny. He's funny. But then he goes, he's like, nice guy. He said, and he names them all by name and what great friends they are. And none of this would have been possible without their friendship. And they all start crying. That's how it ends. And then at the end, though, they show them all sitting there together, her on the pinning in the middle of the couch, and all of them sitting around eating pizza or whatever. And that's how the show ends. And so they have them all on Colbert that night. So I DVR'd it.
Okay.
And they all
dig Kaley Cuoco.
Yeah, I absolutely dig Kaley Cuoco. But that'd be yes. If you're looking for an affirmation, yes. But they had them all, but it was here's two things I didn't know. Kamal, who plays Raj, that really is his accent. I thought it was a put-on accent. It really is his accent.
Okay. I didn't know that.
Yeah, he talked. I mean, so I didn't know that either. Bernadette sounds nothing like that.
Right. I didn't know that.
I didn't know that either. Sounds nothing like that. And so, but it was really, it was, and here they're all telling funny stories. It was really cool. I thought it was, so where does it run? Is it, I mean, it's the longest run, 279 episodes, the longest ever. MASH, Seinfeld, The Dick Van Dyke Show, Friends. None of them had that many episodes. Did you realize that?
That's impressive.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
Wow, that's really a testament to the writers, because that's a show that I feel like could have gotten stale pretty easily, because there's not a whole lot of events going on. Yeah, okay, you've got the Leonard and Penny. Are they going to get together or not? Outside of that, there's not really anything that's going to draw you in. But they were able to keep the story going.
Yeah, I mean, it was. It was funny. It was and
what's Bernadette's husband's name?
Howard.
I think Howard was the funniest of all.
Howard's
of them.
Hilarious.
I think the relationship with he and his mom and everything. Yes, I think he was the
funniest. The mom who you never saw, you heard but never saw. Mm-hmm. I did. I thought of, so, but I was thinking about this. It will. You can't say which ones you like the best because you can't say which ones you like the best because that's a generational thing. The super old people liked MASH the best. The people not as old probably like, or the people even older than that like Dick Van Dyke, and then people like MASH, and then the next generation like Seinfeld, you know, and then the people that some like Friends. So really, where you land is how old you are, kind of. But I wonder how it'll be rated compared to those, you know. I mean, because it was a popular, it was the number one sitcom for a lot of years, you know. Will it be remembered like those others, better, worse?
I think it'll be remembered more for Parsons. Because right. He is such a gifted physical comedian.
Yes.
I mean, how he is able to have those facial tics, like when he has a secret that he can't, like he has a secret about Penny that he can't tell Leonard, but right. Leonard's right. trying to get right. it out of him.
Right.
And he's able to yes. contort his face in such a way that is hysterical.
Yes.
I've never seen any, I mean, I
but he's hilarious.
He's in rare air yeah. in terms of performers that can do so many different things at a comedic yeah. level.
I don't think any show had as many really funny people as Seinfeld, because they were all really funny.
Mm-hmm.
Even Seinfeld, who really is a straight man, is such a funny straight man because he's smirking.
Right.
He smirks the whole time. He's almost like a Saturday Night Live skit where you're trying not to laugh.
Mm-hmm.
But Seinfeld, had all four of them were so funny that I don't know that other shows have had that. I mean, MASH didn't have that. They didn't have Friends. They were all really cool characters, and they all had their funny moments. I was never really into Friends, but my daughter was, and Molly Ezell was really into it. One of my daughter's a surrogate big sister, if you will.
I loved it for a
yeah,
while.
Yeah. But Seinfeld out of the four funny ones. Parsons might have been more funnier than any of them, though. So it'll you're right. It'll be remembered for him.
Kramer versus him, that would be hard.
But Kramer only had kind of, well, you're right. But
He doesn't have to carry as much of it.
That's
yeah,
true.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Sheldon carried it. The show's not the show with that.
Yeah.
So much of the show was built, even though not every storyline was, his personality was a big part of all of it. But it was really a funny show. I'm thinking about how it'll be remembered. The other thing, too, is the
I keep thinking about Kramer in the car with George's mom. And he has to slam on his brakes, and he puts his arm out to make sure she doesn't go flying. And she tells her husband that he stopped short, meaning like he slammed on the brakes so that he could touch her chest.
Oh,
and he comes to Kramer, the dad, and he's like, "You stopped short with my wife."
That's funny.
No, he stopped short. That's my move.
That's right. But you know what else it'll be remembered for is the writing of the science. All the stuff they said, and you know that would in the I read a story about it one time. That the equations are all real. That whoever wrote that show,
wow.
I mean that's what's amazing about it. But on Colbert, they had him on Colbert, and then at the end, right at the end, Bare Naked Ladies were on and sang the song.
Oh, that's
and that
cool.
was while they were all sitting. That was cool. That to see Bare Naked Ladies come and sing the theme song.
Definitely one of the most recognizable themes.
Well, I would say that and Friends.
Yeah.
Friends had a really recognizable, you know, and Cheers. I would mm-hmm. say, as far as recognizable themes, Cheers, Everybody Knows Your Name, the Friends song, and this song were probably the most recognizable. Anyway, I felt, I felt sad that it was going off the air, even though I don't watch it anymore. Like, kind of like you. You know, I watch the reruns more than the new one.
Yeah, and I don't know why I got – and I think it was almost like maybe we followed it and then maybe something happened and our routine got disrupted and then maybe it went back to the beginning. And we've just have always been off track with it. And so maybe one day I'll finish it up because it's – every time I watch it, it's – good.
It's always consistently funny. It's good. Always, it's always
now
funny.
I just have "I'll Be There for You" by the Rembrandts stuck in my head because that's the Friends.
Is that who sings that? I know the song. I didn't know who sang
it. When I worked at UNF, one of the baseball players, I forget now who it was, but that was his walk-up song.
God bless him.
As he was walking up, would do the clapping part. So I thought that was kind of cool that he involved the fans.
It's also bold. Yeah. You know? I give him credit.
Have you ever heard them play like the full song on the radio?
Probably.
I don't like the full song. Like, as a theme, it's awesome. But like, as a 3.5 minute song, for some reason, I don't think it's very good.
Right, but
it's amazing how that works. But
I'm just impressed with myself that I remembered the artist. I looked nothing up and I remembered the Rembrandts.
I never knew who the artist was. So all right, I'll just about do it for our program. Do want to remind you again. We'll tell you all throughout the course of the week. We'll be giving away tickets to the First Pitch. We'd love to have you come be part of it, participate with us, come down on the field and hit afterwards. But mostly eat food from 12 great restaurants here in Jacksonville, which are really, really outstanding restaurants. And we appreciate all their participation. Tickets are only $10. You can get them at walkoffcharities.com, or we're giving away a 4-pack on every show on the radio station this week.
And thanks to Hayes for the extra 4-pack.
And Hayes just bought, and whoever just got a 4-pack got it.
Yeah, we have Josh, and then who was our second winner, Gibby?
Mike.
Mike, you are going, you and your family, or you and three others are going. A compliment of our friend Hayes Carlisle. We do
tomorrow. We get to watch football.
So tomorrow.
By the way, it looks like Gerald McCoy released by the Bucs.
How about that?
Oh, interesting.
How about that? Yeah, you'd heard they were trying to move him, and often when you're trying to move a guy this late and you can't, that means you're getting released. And so, I don't know. I would say he's got something left. You know, the great thing about McCoy is he was a 3-down guy, Hayes. I don't think he's that anymore.
He's 31.
Yeah, but he's an old 31. He's played a lot of downs.
It'll be interesting where he lands.
Yeah, he's played a lot of downs as a 3 technique with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Now, the 2-minute drill delivered by Moe's Southwest Grill.
Welcome to Moe's!
At Moe's, our caterings have you covered from head to toe and especially stomach. Order your office event or tailgate catering today online at moescateringfl.com.
Rick Belue is in the house. What's up, Ricky B?
Hey, what's going on?
We talked a minute ago about Deontay Wilder. Is he more recognizable now than any heavyweight in how long?
Remember when I grabbed him 7 years ago in Phoenix?
Yes.
6-7 years ago in Phoenix?
Yes.
And
we saw him at Hooters then. Remember that?
Yeah, we saw him out, but I did an interview with him, and no one even knew who he was.
Right, that's where we were kind of telling that story.
And then Conor McGregor walked in, and like time stopped. And this was really before McGregor became, you know, what he is today. But still, you know, you had the cage fighting, you know, kind of cult figure in McGregor. Then you had, you know, arguably the toughest man in the world, and unrecognizable.
Remember when Holyfield walked in?
You
couldn't get close to him.
Yeah.
And then Deontay Wilder, nobody even wanted to talk to him.
Yeah, I mean, what he did the other night was scary. I mean, it really was in almost legendary. I mean, you could match him with some of the greatest heavyweights that we've ever seen. But I think you can really make that case. You could walk him right down here at Southside Boulevard, and I would think a lot of people would have no idea who it is. But if it was Evander Holyfield, they'd all know who he was.
Yeah. Well, is that changing now or the same?
I don't think the sport's going to change.
Yeah.
I really don't. I'm not sure what the reason is. I mean, listen, he's kind of he's out of the box with his commentary. I mean, the things he said last week were really frightening to a lot of people. He's held on to this belt now for, you know, more than a half decade. I'm not sure what else the people want. I hear all the time that people don't believe that boxing is as popular as it once was. I'm not sure, but star power, he knocked this guy out in a couple of minutes on Saturday.
It was a scary thing. What's coming up tonight on the show?
Well, we got a little bit of that. We'll obviously look back to the PGA Championship, and hey, I'm as excited as you guys are tomorrow, first day to get out there and watch the Jaguars practice 3 times this week for the next month, so very excited about that. We'll talk some Jags tonight.
It's all coming up into the night with Rick Belue as soon as we get off the air. Thank you, Rick. All right, almost out of time here. We will be watching the Jags tomorrow. It's an OTA that the media has a chance to take a little peek. We'll tell you what we thought, how players looked. We'll tell you how Gardner Minshew looked Brooks, we haven't talked about even Gardner today.
No, yeah, I should have mentioned him.
It's all coming up tomorrow. So thanks for being part of our program. We're out of here. Don't go anywhere, though. Rick Ballew is coming up next. For Hayes Carline, Lauren Brooks, and for Andrew Gibson, I'm Frank Frangie. So long.